Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Trisha's True Crime Radio. It's the only radio show that cleans and freshens your mouth while you sleep. Truly, it does do that. My name's Trisha. I'm so glad you're with us tonight. We're going to have an amazing show. And the show tonight is brought to you by the Unclaimed Forum on WebSleuths.com. Anyone can join and help as members work with coroners from across the country to try and find an unclaimed victim's family. It's a very rewarding and emotional experience. Simple to do. Just go to WebSleuths.com and click on the link to the Unclaimed Forum to read more about it and join up. It's absolutely free. Oh, my goodness. As we say in Utah, oh, my flipping heck, do we have a plethora of guests tonight. Katie Cool Lady is here to update us on all that stuff that went on behind the scenes in the courtroom during the closing arguments in Jody Arias' trial. We also welcome Chris Hughes. Chris was one of Travis Alexander's best friends, and you may have seen Chris on some of the talk shows lately. Unfortunately, those shows only allow for maybe 3 to 4 minutes or less to tell the story. Chris Hughes has a very compelling story that he would like to tell us from beginning to end, and tonight we will let him do that. Later in the show, we'll talk to a gentleman named Jonathan. He's from Canada, and one of his hobbies is graphic art. Jonathan made something very special for Juan Martinez, and Jonathan also has a compelling story for us. And later we might hear from Michael in Minnesota. He has something to add as well. So this really is turning into Trisha's True Crime Radio Manly Man Hour. I don't think we've had this many male guests ever. Now, already I'm growing hair on my back from the testosterone. It's that male-oriented. And we'll get to all those wonderful guests in just a moment. But first, how can I say this? The only word that comes to mind is damn. It's finally to the jury. The jury will now have to decide what happens to Jody Arias. Now, people are assuming that the jury will come back with a quick verdict on Monday. Not me. I'm scared. Can't you see this scenario? Someone wanting to be the one to hang this jury. What if they go for manslaughter just to get it over with and everybody agrees on it so they can get out of there? Remember, Jody tried to plea bargain by agreeing to plead guilty to second-degree murder. But Juan Martinez said, no way, and he took it to trial. Now, if the jury comes back with anything less than murder, one, death penalty, it will be a big blow to Juan Martinez. Now, personally, I think he's great. I love Juan Martinez. He's a man of high standards. He's a great person. I would love to meet him someday. I admire him greatly. But I think I'm one of the few people who did not like the way Mr. Martinez treated the witnesses. He was a bully, in my opinion. He nitpicked to the point where I was ready to throw my TV out the radio, or out the radio, how about out the window, and pull an Elvis by shooting it with my gun. It was driving me crazy how long he went on and on and on. And the jury, maybe just one person, might be turned off by how Juan Martinez bullied the witnesses. And maybe they might punish him for his behavior. Now, that's not right, but it could happen. There's a lot riding on this, so we'll have to wait and see. I hope and pray I'm wrong. I would love to be so wrong about this. And tomorrow, let's hope that they go in there and they find out quickly what the verdict is and bring it back out. Now, Juan Martinez got to tell Travis's story, and he did a fantastic job at the trial. But there are some stories that need to be straightened out, and the truth needs to be told, and tonight we are going to do just that. Let's welcome Chris Hughes. Chris, welcome to the show. I'm so glad you're on tonight.
Hey, thank you, and I'm glad to be here. Happy to speak for Travis.
Well, I'll tell you what. I know you haven't had a chance to tell your whole story. You have as much time as you want. Nobody's going to interrupt you. We'll take questions at the end. And, Chris, if there are some questions that you don't feel comfortable answering, just say so and we'll move on. But I want you to tell the story of Travis. This is a night that we're going to focus on Travis, who he was as a person, what the real story is behind his quote-unquote, you know, abusive behavior, which we all know is a complete lie. So tell us how you met Travis, and let's work up and just go from there.
All right. Well, thanks so much, and I love having this platform. And just to put all of this in perspective, I know we all know this, but I want to reiterate that Travis was silenced by Jody Arias in June of 2008. And so, you know, I live a very low profile lifestyle. My wife and I live on the side of a mountain in Utah, and we, leaving the house is a burden. You know, we're homebodies, we stay low, and this is not my MO, you know, to go out there and to, you know, in the public eye, I guess you would. I get plenty of that in my seminars and some of the other stuff that I do. I'm speaking here today, and the only reason I've done any media or anything related to that is because my good friend Travis Alexander was silenced by Jody Arias. In other words, he was killed by Jody Arias. Mm-hmm. So with that as kind of our foundation, I want to hit some of the highlights of, you know, my life with Travis and then how that transitioned into, you know, the Travis and his relationship with Jody Arias. But I met Travis it would have been in the spring, summer of 2001. I had started a marketing business in Fort Worth, Texas, and got it off the ground, and I heard that business might be good in Southern California. So my brothers and I and a handful of other people, we just up and moved to California. Our intention was to be there just for a few months, just for the summer months, and then move back. But, you know, business was great, and I met my wife out there. I guess I re-met. That's a whole other story, but she was out there. And so later on, we started dating. We ended up staying. So I was in SoCal for about 10 years. But just after moving there, I found a local church. You know, a singles church, because I was still within that age, and the LDS church, singles between the age of 18 and 30 kind of have their own congregations. It's a very cool thing that they do, and it allows them to meet people within their peer group and, you know, date and hang out and be social with people their age. So the bishop asked me to teach Sunday school, and so I was one of a handful of Sunday school teachers. And I don't remember what the lesson was on, but I quoted from the book, How to Win Friends and Influence People by Dale Carnegie. Mm-hmm. I quoted a poem in that book it was called Father Forgets. And it's a beautiful poem and really causes you to think. Anybody who has kids, I mean, you got to look that poem up. It's so good. But so I quoted that, and that was kind of how I ended my lesson. And Travis was the Sunday school president. So he was over all the Sunday school classes and over all the teachers in the church there. So he was visiting my class that day just to make sure, you know, I wasn't teaching false doctrines and taking the church astray. So he was just kind of visiting and seeing how I was doing my job. And after, as soon as the lesson was over, Travis came up to me and he said, and we didn't know each other. We'd maybe said hi a couple times, but we hadn't really officially met. And so he says to me, Father Forgets, Dale Carnegie, How to Win Friends and Influence People. And I said, really? You read that stuff? And he goes, all the time. I got a library full of that stuff. I go, oh, my gosh, I love personal development. He's like, oh, yeah, me too. And, you know, Tony Robbins and Brian Tracy and Jim Rohn and Mark Victor Hansen. And we start putting out all these names. It's like, yeah, yeah, yeah. So instantaneously, we had this bond because we had this this thread of commonality, this passion for personal development and personal improvement. Mm-hmm. So he said to me, hey, let me ask you a question. What do you do for a living? Like, what do you do for work? And I was joking, you know, and I said, well, I dance, you know, have you ever heard of Chippendales? And, you know, he starts laughing. Of course, I start laughing. And, you know, it's just two guys getting to know each other, right? Mm-hmm. And he's like, no, man, I think I know a little bit about what you do. And so I said, well, look, I don't want to get into it right now. Why don't we go to lunch? So I took him to lunch on, I think, the following Tuesday. And I talked a little bit about business and what it was that I was doing, and I was looking for a business partner at the time, and, you know, I really liked him up to that point. Mm-hmm. So I had him come to one of my seminars that evening, and we had somebody else who was speaking, and Travis fell in love, and he got started. And we started working together that week.
May I ask you something? Was that the prepaid legal?
Yes. Uh-huh.
Okay.
Yep. So,
just want to make sure.
That
okay.
was how he started his prepaid legal career.
Mm-hmm.
And I started coaching him and training him, and it became clear to me that he was going to be a superstar. You know, I didn't need to train him on, you know, the prepaid legal stuff, as it were. I really wanted to start training him on how to be a speaker, because he had so much promise as a speaker. And so we would spend a lot of time, you know, developing his abilities and sharing best practices for stage speaking.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was kind of how it all got going. And he was on, just from a professional standpoint, some people have asked, you know, how he was really doing financially and all of that. So I'm going to try to answer a lot of the questions that I've been getting on Twitter and other places. But those first couple of years, Travis was on this amazing trajectory. I think his best year, before he started dating Jody, he got his income up to right around $100,000.
Wow.
So he was a young guy, single guy, and he was making really, really great money. And I had predicted that he would be at the, you know, $200,000, $300,000 a year within a couple of years if he just kept doing what he was doing.
Mm-hmm.
Well, along comes Jody, and I'll piece this all together later, but, you know, they started traveling together, and really he began to neglect his business. He still did his weekly meetings and seminars, and he did that. So from an outsider looking in, it looked like he was still doing everything that he had ever done, but that wasn't the case. When he was killed in 2008, you know, that last year or so, he went through some pretty severe financial hardship. Again, because he had stopped working and got distracted with Jody, and he had all these other things kind of going on in his life. So
can I ask you one thing? I hate to interrupt,
yeah.
But I want to make sure we're clear on this. So he was doing great. Jody Arias comes along, and it starts to fall apart. Was that the main reason, only reason, or were there other reasons, and it all was kind of all came to a head, and he was just doing poorly? Can you honestly say that Jody Arias is the reason that he started to neglect his business?
I can't say that Jody is the reason why he started to neglect his business. I do think there was a lot of contributing factors. Number one,
mm-hmm.
you know, he was a poor kid, and I can relate to this because I never had money, and then all of a sudden I've got more money than I know what to do with, and there's a tendency to get lazy at that point.
Right.
Because it's like, hey, my bills are paid, and you don't have that hunger ambition anymore. So, no, I don't blame her exclusively, not at all. But I will say this. This is very interesting. Jacob Medford, who was also friends of mine and Travis's, when he first met Jody at a seminar, at a business training, he looked at my wife and he said, I don't know who that girl is, but she's going to ruin his life. So he said, she's going to ruin his business and ruin his life.
Oh,
very
my gosh.
First thing he said. Oh, yeah. I mean,
that's
there were
amazing.
A few people... Yeah, there were a few people that were dialed into Jody, and unfortunately, I wasn't one of them initially. And my wife, who has this incredible sixth sense about people, she didn't get it either right off the bat. But one more story that's just interesting. We have another friend named Jamie Simcoe. Jamie Simcoe, when he met Jody at his first seminar that she showed up, he was smitten by her. And you may remember he was on Nancy Grace's show, if you saw it, and he said, referring to Jody, she was smoking hot and she was real nice. That was kind of the thing that Nancy kept playing over and over and over again. Well, so he goes home from that seminar, pulls up Jody's MySpace, shows it to a friend of his, who's also a friend of mine, Vincent Ponce, and says, Vince, you got to check out this girl. Pulls up the MySpace account. Vincent looks at her. His first glance at Jody Arias, he says, bro, that chick's a black widow.
Oh, my gosh.
The very first thing he said. So, and I could tell you three or four or five other stories just like that. So there were a few people that just got her from
mm-hmm.
the get-go. So anyway, so let's move forward. Travis and I become, you know, really over time we became best friends and workout partners and mastermind partners, and we just had such great chemistry, and we had a lot in common. We had similar childhoods, and so, you know, we were tight, right? And then my wife and I, we got married in 2002, so about a year after Travis and I met. And Travis and Sky and I, the three of us, became really, really good friends and did a lot of business planning together, et cetera. So let's fast forward to September 2006. Mm-hmm. September 2006 is the famous convention at the MGM Grand in Las Vegas. And Travis comes to this, we have a banquet for the top people in the company. There's about 1,000 people in this room. And it's all the tables are 10 tops. So we had prearranged who all was going to sit there. And we had a seat for Travis. And sometimes Travis would bring, you know, someone with him. So we had a seat for Travis and a seat for whoever he'd like to bring with him. So he shows up in his pinstripe suit and his bow tie, and he tells us about this girl that he met, Jodi Arias. And he's describing her, you know, blonde hair, and he was expressing how he was attracted to her. And we said, well, is she coming to the banquet? And he says, no, she was trying to find a dress all day today, but she couldn't find one. Well, this is just a weird background story. My wife happened to bring an extra dress to the bank, you know, to the event. And so she says, Travis, how big is she? You know, I have an extra dress. And he says, oh, you guys are about, you know, the same size. Like, yeah, that'll work. And he got really excited. And Sky gave him our room key, and he ran out of the banquet. You know, it was just getting going. And he runs out of the banquet, goes and finds Jodi, says, hey, I got this dress for you. They go and grab the dress, and she changes. And within about 20 minutes, Jodi and Travis are sitting at this banquet at our table, and we're getting acquainted. So people have asked a million times, did you know what Jodi was capable of the day you met her? And the answer is no. Unlike a lot of people that have done a lot of media, I don't believe, you know, half the people that have gone on and said what they say about Jodi, and oh, yeah, she was evil and empty, and I saw it immediately. There were a few people, definitely some people who said that. For us, that wasn't the fact of the matter. We happen to like her. You know, it's hard for me to say this now, but that's the truth, so I'm going to tell it. We liked her, and I don't know if it was that we just genuinely liked her, or if we like the idea of her because we were rooting for Travis. You know, he wanted to get married, and, you know, he wanted an attractive woman, and, you know, like, hey, here we go. And, you know, she looked us in the eye. She had a firm handshake. She seemed to be well-read, and she was socially appropriate. And, you know, we were all kind of watching her closely that night to see what we thought about her. And one of the things we gathered is that she was an artist. And so we did pick up kind of she was eccentric, you know, a little bit. We couldn't put a finger on it. It was like, hey, she's an artist. A lot of artists are eccentric. No problem, you know.
Was she quiet or and shy or talkative?
She wasn't. You know how some people, out of insecurity, when you meet them, they try to dominate the situation. They try to dominate the conversation and show you how cool they are, right? She didn't do that. She was, again, socially appropriate. So she wasn't shy. She wasn't submissive. She wasn't, you know, meek and lowly. She smiled, and when she was called upon, or, you know, she answered the question intelligently. And, you know, some people that are really shy, you ask a question and they just give you a one-sentence response.
Right.
But she gave you, you know, she gave you a descriptive answer. She didn't go overboard. So it was, you know, she was appropriate. We thought she was interesting enough, certainly.
Mm-hmm.
So we're giving Travis a thumbs up at this point, right?
Okay, right.
So that's September of 2006. There was a few things, few red flags right off the bat that we started to see. And it was like, ah, that's weird. But they began to add up, and, you know, there was a turning point. Or a tipping point, I should say. Yeah,
and you're going to get to that, right? You're going to tell us all
yeah,
of
absolutely.
That. Okay,
yeah,
great. Okay,
absolutely.
Continue, please.
So Travis was ever the Mormon missionary. You know, anyone who knew him knew that he couldn't help himself. You know, he loved the gospel. He loved the truth as he understood it. He loved the Book of Mormon. He loved the Bible. And he loved sharing what it was that he believed to be true with others, passionately and sometimes goofily, you know, just goofing around or whatever. Mm-hmm. That was Travis. So it doesn't surprise me that right off the bat when they start talking, he sent her Book of Mormon. And then he asks her if she'd like to learn more, and she said yes, and so he sends the Mormon missionaries, with her permission, the Mormon missionaries over to her house. So that was happening. Well, and in this time, I don't know when all of this happened, but we had them over to our house one evening, and we're all, the four of us, Sky and I and Travis and Jody, were sitting in the hot tub. And this was one of the first times that we saw something that we're like, what? You know, like, mm-hmm. what was that? And it was like Jody was in middle school, and her parents were out of town, and she had a boyfriend come over. And she was, like, giggling, giddy, crawling on him in the hot tub. I mean, like, we're like, hello, you know, are we not here? Can you not see us? And she's, like, crawling all over him and giggling in his ear and nibbling on his ear and, you know, squeezing his cheeks. And it was like, it was.
Oh, that's just creepy.
Yeah, it was so weird, and Sky and I are looking at each other going, is she doing this? You know, but it wasn't like, it wasn't like sensual and like sexy, you know, it was like, oh, it was just weird, you know, weird. And Travis was like, trying to not be rude, but he's politely, you know, kind of moving her over, you know, hey, you sit over here, I'll sit over here, because it's not like any of us were being romantic. We're talking about, you know, politics and religion and, you know, the weather. I mean, we're talking about just random stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And she's, you know, she's crawling all. It was just weird. I mean, just so weird. So that was kind of the first thing that we saw. We said that was so odd.
Yeah.
And then, so she's like, really quickly, she gets baptized. And Travis wouldn't commit to her. And we call her the Great Chameleon. You know, we didn't then because we didn't know that we were all being manipulated. But we, you know, it's obvious to see it today. But, yeah, you know, we call her the Great Chameleon because she changes depending on who she's with.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, she – and anybody who knows Jody, like we know Jody, you can see her. She's very thoughtful. She's very observant. She's taking in her surroundings at all times. And she's doing mental calculations about how she should be and how she thinks others think she should be.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, just really weird. Well, the Mormon thing didn't work for her. He still wouldn't commit.
Mm-hmm.
So then she thinks, well, hey, what if I become a scriptorian? So these are some other odd things we saw around her house. So we're all, you know, just imagine. Go ahead.
I need to ask, what is a scriptorian?
Oh, just somebody who knows the scriptures, loves the scriptures.
Okay.
Somebody who's an expert at that, which Travis was, by the way.
Right. Okay, so you said, so imagine this, we're all, and then I interrupted you. What was going to say?
Yeah, so just chaos in the house, right? Travis is probably texting on his phone, and my kids are running around the house, and Sky's, you know, doing something, and I'm doing something. And Jody is walking around our house, walking, with the Book of Mormon in her hand, reading. Just walking around, you know, making sure that we all see that Jody's reading the Book of Mormon.
Right.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Had to have an audience, sure.
You had to have it. Yeah, totally, like, parading it. And, again, it's just like, okay, we're taking notes. That's an odd thing to do.
Right.
You know, when I read a book, I don't walk around the house. I curl up on the couch or on my bed or in front of the fireplace, and I read a book. You know, but she's like, look at me, look at me. I'm Molly Mormon. I'm reading the Book of Mormon. So we start to see stuff like that. And I'm just going to give you a few of 30 different examples like this.
Got it.
I invited Travis to come and do a seminar at San Bernardino Hilton. This would have been, again, back in 2000 and maybe 6, maybe 7. I don't know. That's not important. What's important is Travis is in on the stage doing his thing. My wife and all the gals that she has help her do the registration at this seminar are out front sitting at this registration table.
Mm-hmm.
Jody's trying to befriend these women, and at this point, everybody's just, you know, they approach Jody at arm's reach. You know, they just don't
They're feeling it now because she's just odd, and they don't know what to
do.
Can I let me ask you one quick question. By this time, let me just tell everybody, we're talking with Chris Hughes, one of Travis Alexander's best friends, and he's telling us the backstory of Jody and Travis. At this time, did Travis ever indicate to you that he thought she was weird and he wanted to get rid of her.
No, not at all. Travis just thought, he was...
smitten.
He was a big-time Jody fan. He thought she was the nicest person on the planet and, just great, phenomenal. Yeah.
Okay, so you're at the convention.
Yeah, so we're at this convention, San Bernardino Hilton Hotel, and Jody's out front. And just imagine a long hallway, okay? And at one end of the hallway is our seminar in a banquet room, off to the left-hand side. And then at the opposite side of this long hallway is another banquet room, and it's full of men. I'm not sure what they were doing in there, but the doors were open, so you could see the seminar was going on, and then people are kind of sitting around tables, and they're all men. Well, at the other end of this hallway, opposite of us, there's this giant mirror, and it takes up the whole wall.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Jody would walk. She was working it, okay? She's walking from our end of the hallway all the way down to the other end. She would stand in front of that mirror, which was also right in front of this open door full of men.
Mm-hmm.
And she's working it in the mirror. Throwing her hair around.
Oh,
you know,
God.
Putting her fingers. Oh, yeah, it was almost like a joke. If we could have videoed it and put it on YouTube, it would have gone viral. It was it was like, is she for real, And then she'd strut it back, and she says to my wife and all these other ladies there, gosh, those guys keep looking at me.
Oh,
she's like, they're just like staring at me. Like, they just keep looking. And then she turns around, and she hightails it right back. She goes all the way down to the other end. She's flipping her hair around, primping in the mirror. She looks over to her right to make sure that these guys are watching her, flips her hair around again, turns, walks back. Goes. She's like, oh, those guys, they keep staring at me. And they go to break or something, so these men come out. And Jody says to all these ladies, again, who are all there, all good friends with Travis, she says, hey, if any of those guys, they were looking at me, and if any of those guys try to hit on me, will you just tell them that I'm Travis Alexander's girlfriend? So it was
that,
like,
makes me sick. What a
just total, like, high school, just weird. And so just think about that. Okay, first of all, it's like, it's one thing to say, hey, if you see anybody bothering me, just tell, if you can help me out and tell them to have a boyfriend,
Right.
But it's Travis Alexander's girlfriend. She started to get possessive. She started to lay claim on him. Okay, so these are other things. In December of 2006, she shares with my wife something interesting, that she had a vision that she was going to marry Travis Alexander, and she knew for a fact. Yes, she knew for a fact in December of 2006 that Travis Alexander and Jody Arias were to be wed in a Mormon temple.
No.
In a Mormon temple. She saw it all. It was in vision. She saw it. And when Mormons get married in the temple, they wear all white. All white. The women are white dresses, but the men are white pants, white shirt, white tie, white belt, white socks, white shoes, all white.
Mm-hmm.
And so she tells Skye that she had this vision that they were in all in white, indicating that it was in the temple. Mm. And that they were going to get married. So, red flag, red flag, red flag.
Oh, yes, definitely.
And by the way, they're not even committed at this point. They've only seen each other like 4 or 5 times at this point. They live in different states. So I think it was in about this time we see Jody flirting with married men. I've got a friend, and I'll leave him nameless because that's not relevant. But, shamelessly, lacing her arm through his and pulling it into her breast.
Oh,
and,
no.
At a restaurant. I think we're at Mimi's Cafe or something. And she lays her head on his shoulder. And, we saw that sort of thing all the time. But all of this was to make Travis jealous. Just was always trying to make him jealous. So anyway, so we started to see all these things. Now we're annoyed by her. It's like we still kind of like her for Travis, but it's like we can't figure it out. She's just immature or controlling or possessed. You know, I don't know. I just hadn't put a finger on it.
Right.
Well, she starts showing up at our house unannounced and uninvited.
Oh, wow. That's creepy.
Yeah, that was weirding us out.
Yeah, that's not good. So Travis wasn't there, but she would just show up at your house, right?
Right. Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah. Well, one time she does this, and it's just, gosh, I look back, and it was so obvious, but we couldn't see it. Mm-hmm. And this whole thing was manipulation. She tried the Mormon thing, and it wasn't working. So she tried this, you know, the Molly Mormon thing, reading her scriptures all the time, and that wasn't working. And Travis wouldn't commit, and Travis wouldn't invite her to go to Arizona,
mm-hmm.
to move to Arizona. So she comes over, and this is, I'm setting you up for the famous or infamous emails, abuse emails, okay?
Okay, got you.
So this is when this was about to occur. This is, I believe, January 2007. So she basically comes over unannounced, uninvited, and she's crying, and she's sad, and Travis won't commit to me, and
mm-hmm.
he's dating other girls, and I got into his email and his Facebook account, and I forwarded all of these emails from these other women to me. So she got in that she admits that to my wife.
Right.
And he calls me late at night, you know, when he doesn't have anything left. And that was her thing.
Mm-hmm.
And our advice to her was dump him.
Yeah, someone treats you like that, tell him to go to hell and move on.
Yeah, Jody, dump him. You know, Travis is a flirt.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that was one thing that, I mean, and everybody knows it, and then people are, oh, don't say, no, Travis was a flirt. You know, we all thought it was hilarious. It was cute. That was Travis.
Right.
You know, it was one of those things. And we're like, look, he's enjoying himself right now, you know? And
he's
and
a young man, yeah.
Exactly. He's a young man. And not only that, just think about this. This is from Travis's own his own mouth. Travis was kind of a dork when he was younger, and he ate by himself in the cafeteria.
Oh, that breaks my heart.
He didn't have friends, and people would make fun of him because he had these big legs and a big backside. And it would, when he walked, it would pull his pants up, kind of pulled them up, you know, into his crotch and away from his feet. And so he looked like he was flooding. And kids would follow school and say, up, down, up, down, up, down.
Oh,
because
God.
His pants were going up. Yeah, up into his backside and then down, and up into his backside and then down. And he was just, you know, it just was so sad. And he was living in poverty. And we have all heard the story about his drug-addicted mom and dad and, you know, how they treated him terribly and all that stuff, right?
He rose above all that. That is what's so interesting. Chris, hold on one sec, just in case anybody's joining us. We're talking with Chris Hughes. Chris Hughes was one of Travis Alexander's best friends, and he's going to clarify a bunch of stuff for us tonight. So, anyway, I'm sorry to interrupt. Please continue.
No problem. So, and if there's anybody listening who just was, you know, they perceive themselves to be nothing or nobody in high school, and then he gets into this, you know, personal development. He starts working on his self-confidence and his self-esteem. And there's a lot of emotional healing that begins to take place in his life. And then he gets into a business that tells him, hey, you're not broken. You know, you're not broken. You're talented. You're good at this. Like, you're blowing past people that have been here for 10 and 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
And so he starts to gain this confidence. And now he's got lots of money, and he buys a nice car, and he's buying custom-made suits and shirts and beautiful shoes. And, I mean, you've seen his closet. He took great pride in the way he showed up physically. And guess what? He began to be appealing to lots of women. People loved, men and women, loved Travis, you know?
Mm-hmm.
They just loved him. He was such a cool guy. He was good-looking and well-dressed and well-spoken and well-read, and he was phenomenal on the stage. And he was just so endearing to people. So just imagine going from where he was to now he has girls pursuing him.
Yes,
women
big shot.
Pursuing him.
Yeah,
he's
enjoying himself.
So he's enjoying himself. And that's what we're telling Jody is, look, he's in the prime of his life. leave him alone. If he's not going to commit to you, he's clearly not giving you what you want.
Mm-hmm.
Get out, woman, you know?
Right.
And, oh, I know I'm supposed to marry him, and I've had this vision, and I know we're supposed to be together, and I just love him so much, and he's so amazing. And we're like, look, you don't have a lot of choices here.
You know? Yeah, exactly.
Either he will choose of his own free will and accord that he wants to commit to you, or he's not. But, you know, how long are you going to hold your breath? So that was how that whole thing went. And listen to this. This was our first betrayal by Jody Arias that we're aware of. Sky says to Jody, now, Jody, look, do not. I'm going to ask you for a favor. Everything we've said here tonight, I have said to Travis in his face, you know, like,
right.
We're not bad talking Travis. She said, before you talk to Travis, please allow me to call him to let him know that we had this discussion because I want to tell him everything that was said.
And you're talking about the discussion, of, hey, you should move on, don't, you know.
Exactly.
That it was that discussion. It was you just say goodbye to him and move on. Got it. Okay.
Right. So, and Jody said, oh, yeah, no problem, no problem. Well, it got late that night. Jody invites herself to stay the night, and she had her own room, you know, downstairs in our house. And it's late. We're like, yeah, no problem. Stay here. So we're up. We go to bed, and my wife wakes up maybe an hour or two later to feed the baby, and she sees lights on downstairs. She goes downstairs, and she sees that Jody's in the garage talking to Travis and telling Travis everything that we talked about and more.
God.
Yeah, and we hadn't yet had an opportunity to talk to Travis. So two really important points to be made here. Number one, Jody lied to us. She was manipulating us. She embellished and lied about things Travis was, you know, about her relationship with Travis.
Right.
Then she goes and talks to Travis before we had the opportunity to do that, and she lies and embellishes to Travis about things we said to her about Travis.
About him, right.
Right? Yep. So that starts the infamous email chain. And by the way, let me say this. I have not seen these emails. I wrote these emails from an old email address that I don't have anymore. I haven't had it in years. It was either a business email that has since changed or it was an old Gmail account. So, I wish that I could get them, but I don't have access to them. I would also say this, that when I testified in the prosecutorial misconduct hearing not held before a jury, I believe earlier in January, February, whenever that was, if you will recall, Nurmi was asking me to comment on this email thread.
Mm-hmm.
And I resisted doing that because it was out of context, because he wouldn't allow me. There wasn't the email from Travis. I believe there was one or two emails, you know, back and forth that were missing. And then if I recall correctly, there were some emails on the back end that were missing. So Nermi's trying to get me to testify, and I can't even remember exactly what he was doing exactly. But the thing I do remember is all the emails weren't there, okay? So I didn't feel like I should have to comment, because it's like, I don't know the context of this.
Right.
And he was like, just read line 5 or whatever it was. I can't remember. So, okay, I'll do that. So I read that. So anyway, let me bring up to speed. So Travis sends an email, and I believe the subject was, you crossed the line. And I believe he sent it to both Sky and myself. And he was basically saying, you hurt my relationship, and I'm never going to be able to repair it. And you said these things to Jody, making me look like a terrible person. Yeah, and he's like, you crossed the line, and why couldn't you just talk to me? And he was defending himself. And you know what? These emails, just as a side note, they show how amazing. They show how amazing Travis was as a person. Because we went off, I mean, later, you know, I mean, we went off on him in these emails, and he was so cool about it, you know? I mean, he just was like, I forgive you, I love you guys, don't think of it anymore. You know, whereas most people want to drag it on and drag it on and drag it on.
Oh, yes, yes.
So he says his thing. You know, of course, some of this stuff was lies that Jody had told him.
Mm-hmm.
Were
you able to say, hey, man, we did not say that. She is lying to you. Were you able to get that far into it?
You know, I can't remember if we said that or not, because we were all still so blinded by all of this. You know, mm-hmm. we've kind of put some of the pieces together over the years, but no, I don't have a memory of saying that, to answer your question specifically. So, anyway, I know I need to hurry this up, but so yes, yeah, so you cross the line, and he unloads on us,
mm-hmm.
and then we both write back, and I haven't seen Skye's email. I don't know what all she said to him, but I can guarantee you this: she rocked his world. You know, Skye was very hard on Travis. You know, all the time they had this. They were very, very good friends, but it was like a brother-sister relationship. And
mm-hmm.
my wife, you know, we've been joking lately calling her no-nonsense Skye, or keeping it real with Skye, because she just tells it the way it is.
That's good.
And, yeah, she let Travis have it. And basically what she was saying is, Travis, you're still in love with Deanna Reed.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Like, you need to let Deanna go. What are you doing? Like, you know, now you have this other girl who wants you to commit to her, and you're not. And it's like,
mm-hmm.
you're not emotionally available for Jody. So leave her alone, or, you know, cut it off with Deanna. I mean, she's just basically saying, chill out, T,
mm-hmm.
you know, like. So, and I again, I read those emails when she sent it, and I don't know what all she sent. And I believe that when Nermi had me on the stand, that it was my email that said, and I could be wrong, but I believe it was my email to Travis that said that he was, I used the word abusive, okay?
You said
now,
abusive in your email.
Yes, I used that word. And this is, everybody thinks it's like this great conspiracy and what was that email. Let me just say this before I get into the email, to be very, very clear.
Mm-hmm.
I have never in my life witnessed or heard about any incident at all ever in Travis's life where he physically laid hands on another human being in a violent way. Not one time. And let me say this. The defense had 5 years to find one man or one woman or one child that had been abused by Travis Alexander, and they couldn't find one.
They couldn't even find anybody that Travis had yelled at in anger. I mean, it's ridiculous.
Exactly. Not one person. Nobody even got on the stand and said, I think Travis is a jerk.
Exactly.
Not one person, you know, not one person said that. They've had 5 years. And you know, somebody, and I'll leave him out, but somebody I don't care for is running his mouth on the media and saying that, well, this is a cover-up, and there are women who have been abused by Travis, but they don't want it. Yeah, and it's like, no, listen, you don't understand how this works, because she's fighting for her life, and if Nermi knew of one woman, man, child, anywhere that had been abused by Travis, it's called a subpoena.
Exactly.
And you have to testify. You don't have a choice. So they've had 5 years of deposing people, all of Travis's friends and family and neighbors, and nobody, and I'm sorry, Trisha, for belaboring the point, but
you
nobody,
go, no, you go.
Not one human being. Nobody. You can't, unlike Jody, who kicked her dog, you can't find... You know, unlike Jody, who kicked the walls and put holes in the walls and kicked her mother, you know, unlike her, you can't find a person who would say that Travis was unkind to an animal.
Exactly.
You know, it outrages me. It infuriates me that Chris and Skye Hughes have somehow become the focal point. You know, that we're hiding this big, giant secret that Travis is abusive. All right, let me ask you this. If Travis is abusive, so says La Violette and the defense, you know, and any other uninformed and unenlightened and, you know, intellectually dishonest person, if, in fact, we have evidence that Travis was abusive, then why was I never deposed by Kirk Nurmi?
Exactly. Very good point.
I have never been deposed by the defense. Not one time in 5 years. Nobody has ever deposed me in the defense. And, as an interesting side note, I've not been deposed by the prosecution.
Exactly. If there was one hint of anything that you could have offered the defense in the way of Travis being abusive, you would be at the top of their list, Chris. We're talking
about
Chris Hughes. Chris Hughes, a very close friend of Travis Alexander's, and Chris is here tonight. Chris, let me tell you, we have 3 hours and no commercials, so you take as long as you want because we want to get the truth out, and this show will be up and available forever to everybody. So we want the truth, and we're here for you. I'm looking at the chat room, Chris. Everybody's saying, go, Chris. Yes, Chris. We love you, Chris. So thank you so much. So please continue.
Well, thank you. And I got to tell you, this is very therapeutic.
Good. I'm glad. I'm glad we can help.
So, yes. So, yes. Okay, so Kirk Nurmi is so they have our email, but they're not allowed to read it. And I don't know the rules of court. What I heard was that the judge says it's hearsay because Chris and Sky Hughes never took the stand, right? So
right.
Because they have La Violette on the stand, she can't, you know, they can't show it because it's hearsay because La Violette didn't write the email. Okay, so she's got her crystal ball out there speaking for Chris and Sky Hughes. But here's the thing. Let's just use the voice of reason, as Nurmi likes to say. Let's just use common sense, as Nurmi likes to say. If there's something so damning in that email, if there's something in that email that is going to save the life of Jody, are we okay?
We're here. We're here. We're good.
Okay. If there's something there that Chris and Sky Hughes know that's going to help the defense, why did they not call us? Why did they not call us so that we could read the email, so that they could show the email on the Elmo, on the big screen? Why did they not call us? Let me tell you why they didn't call us. They didn't call us because we would have obliterated the facade that they've created that Travis was abusive. We would have picked that email apart line by line, and here's what we would have gotten for the whole world to see, something called perspective.
Mm-hmm.
And something called context. But without us on the stand, we could not bring the context in. Look, I don't know what the email said, but let me give you the context. Travis, this girl really likes you, and you need to commit to her or get out. That was, you know, and
we were saying
it's not nice emotionally. It's unkind emotionally to drag people along, you know, to give a thought that there might be a commitment, but to not commit. And you know what? Travis was, gosh, he just put it all, again, into context for us. Here's what he writes back, and I do remember this. Guys, I've only known this girl for a few months.
Mm-hmm.
We live in two totally different states. We've only seen each other a few times. Get off my back. Why are you trying to get me to commit to her? Like, leave me alone.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Like, I'm still trying to get to know her. I don't know if I want to commit to her. So that puts it all into context. You know, we're thinking, oh, well, this isn't nice. He needs to commit. It's like, no, I'm not being nice or unnice. I'm exploring this person, this relationship, to see if I want to commit to her. You know, because
exactly.
He knew that after commitment came marriage, right? Mm-hmm. So he was taking his time to make that decision. So that is the email. And I just want everybody to use your common sense. They've had 5 years. You know, let's not give this thing legs. It doesn't deserve legs.
Exactly.
And I'm just going to stop there. Any further questions about that, Tricia, about, you know, those emails before I move forward?
Wow. You know, we've got a bazillion questions. Let me just see here if there's any email specific. Oh, here's one kind of. It's not email specific, but is it true that you and Sky encouraged Travis to marry Jody?
It is true. We told him initially, and it may have even been in those emails. I think Sky said to him, Travis, Jody loves you so much. Like, you know, we like her. You should marry her, you know? Mm-hmm. And I don't know if it's obviously word for word. But, yeah, we were rooting for Travis and for Jody at the time because it was like we knew he liked her, and we knew for sure that she, you know, she told us, I love him so much, and I know we're going to get married, and I had this vision. So we were trying to be matchmakers, and I think that went up through January. And then after January, it was kind of like, no, something's wrong with this. As a matter of fact, my wife said to Travis, this is so frightening, but she said to Travis, Travis, is Jody really as nice as you say she is, or is she a psychopath? Because I can't tell.
Wow. Oh, God, that gave me chills.
Yeah. Is she really that nice? Is she a psychopath? And let me tell you one more interesting story that happened about the same time. And it may have been right after that discussion. I don't know. Sky's got such a great memory for all of this. But Travis says to Sky, you know, why are you hard on her, so hard on her? You know you're her best friend.
Mm-hmm.
That's what Travis said to Sky. He was saying that Sky Hughes was Jody's best friend.
Oh, no. She didn't know that, did she? She didn't realize she was Jody's best friend.
No.
Right. That was a shock.
That was one of the major red flags because Sky says, wait, what'd you say? And he goes, you're her best friend, Sky. Like, you know that, right? And Sky's like, no, Travis. If she told you that, that should be a red flag to you. He's like, why? She's like, Travis, I've never called her.
Oh, my God.
Ever.
He was stunned.
Now, Sky,
he was stunned at this, right, when Sky told Travis, she's not my best friend, I've never called her. He was probably just stunned.
I don't know if he was stunned so much because he was just so in, you know, he's blinded. Love is blind. I mean, you know, he was.
Yes, it is.
And I use the term love loosely. But he was taken by her, you know, completely. Mm-hmm. So we began to see these things, and Sky's like, I mean, and I want to clarify, if Jody called her and maybe left a message and had a question, then yes, Sky would have called her back.
Mm-hmm.
But Sky never called her. She never instigated or initiated the communication. She'd never been to her house. You know, if they were best friends, that was just a sad, it tells you a lot about Jody.
About the state of Jody Arias's relationships. She had none.
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly. And I would say this, and I don't want to be thought of as this, you know, angry guy out there, but just to contrast, I want you to look at the people that have just, where are her friends? You know?
Exactly.
Where are her friends that are doing media and talking about her character and how she would never, you know, hurt anybody and how amazing she is? And where are they?
They don't exist.
You know, they don't exist because she has, you know, she was an emotional parasite and bounced from one person to another. She manipulated. She was the great chameleon, and she just moved around. You know, that was her life. Even
mm-hmm.
her own parents, if you saw the interrogation videos, you know, her own dad saying, I don't know, man, you know, she's just weird, you know. She's weird. I mean, her own parents, that's sad, and I don't want to. You know, if she didn't murder my friend, I wouldn't be having these conversations at
exactly.
all.
Exactly. You wouldn't be saying these things, sure. We understand.
Again. So, this is all opposite my nature, but I've got a score to settle.
Absolutely. I do have a question about the email, if you want me to ask you right now. Okay.
Yeah, go ahead.
Let's see. The question is, why you and Sky, oh, never mind. We've already answered that. Why you weren't called by the prosecutor. Why weren't you called by the prosecutor?
Yeah, I don't know, you know, but I would just say this. I would guess that he didn't need us, you know. I mean,
oh, there you go.
It's just, yeah, that would be my answer, is that he didn't need us. And again, let's all stay focused on, let's not get lost in the smoke screen. That email was a smoke screen. A lot, the sexcapades is a defense smoke screen. You know, the pedophilia nonsense is smoke screen. Let's look at the facts. Not, again, not one man, woman, or child could they find in 5 years.
Exactly.
That trafficking harm. So let's just, you know, that's all that really matters.
Here's one more question for you. We're talking with Chris Hughes, one of Travis Alexander's best friends, and he is letting it all out tonight, and we love him for it. He is telling us the whole story behind the lies that Jody Arias has been telling and that have been put forth in court. And here's another question. Do you believe that it is fair to believe that Jody was using taped phone sex to control Travis, which led to the email saying he was ending it all for good? Like he found, I guess,
that is,
do you think he found out about the tapes and he went, I'm done?
Yeah, and I thought we'd probably end there. Maybe we can talk more about that.
Oh,
but,
okay, we'll end with that. That's a good one.
Yeah,
okay,
but definitely towards the end,
right.
end, yeah.
Okay, so why don't you go ahead
great,
and continue.
Great question. Yeah, so there's the best friend thing, and again, red flag, red flag, red flag, red flag, red flag, and then there's that famous night in April 2007 where Jody was caught twice eavesdropping outside of my wife, outside of our bedroom.
Oh, that's so funny.
Our bedroom door.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, so, and let me kind of let you know what led up to this. So just imagine this. We're in our SUV. We're driving around our neighborhood looking at some of these big, beautiful houses. You know, just kind of dreaming, you know, like, look at this house. Look at the big, beautiful, multi-million dollar houses. And Travis is with us and Jody's with us. And I can't remember who was driving where, but he's situated. All I know is that the rearview mirror was situated such that when Jody, and maybe Travis was in the, I can't remember, but when Jody looked in the mirror, Travis and Jody could look at each other, okay?
Right.
In the rearview mirror, okay? And Travis was just being Travis. He was just being funny. She was trying to lock eyes with him. She was trying to make eye contact with him, but he was totally like just joking. So he would look right over to the rearview mirror, and then he would look up and over it, and then over it, and then look over to the other side, and he's giggling. He's just being silly, and then he looks back, but he won't look in the rearview mirror. He won't look at Jody, and she's trying to just make goo-goo eyes at him.
Oh, brother.
And so he's just being silly, and we all thought it was funny. Well, she gets irate about it. She is so mad and so hurt about it, and she confronts him about it when we get back to the house, to our house. And so they were kind of, like, not talking because he wouldn't lock eyes with her.
Oh, that is so, what a baby. That makes me sick.
Yeah. I know, it's so ridiculous. So she goes into her room and pouts. And I don't know, maybe she came out. I don't know. My memory tells me that Sky and Jody are in another room talking. Travis and I are in the office talking, and I get a text from Sky. Now, just try to visualize this. Travis and I are talking. We're into this conversation, whatever it is. We're only a foot or so apart.
Mm-hmm.
And my phone gets a text message, and Travis and I both look down at my phone, and it says, from Sky Hughes, and it says, she's driving me crazy. Get her out of here.
Oh, my goodness gracious. Wow.
And she's got Sky, like a broken record. He won't commit to me. You know, I love him so much. I had him over and over and over. And why won't he remind me, Tricia, remind me about the stalker email if I forget. Make a note of that because I want to cover that
stalker
next.
Stalker email. Okay.
Stalker email. Okay.
Stalker. Okay.
So, you know. So it was just over and over and over and over and over. He won't invite me to move to Arizona. All that stuff, okay? So so Sky's just at the end. It's like, now we see that this girl's a manipulator. We figured out that she lied to us, that she lied to Travis about that whole email thing, got us all in a fight. And by the way, the only fight I ever had with Travis, the only discord ever in our relationship, was caused by Jody Arias.
And what was that?
And it was that, you know, manipulating us.
It was that. It was
do through, exactly what, yeah, to do exactly what we did to Travis. And then she went and lied to Travis about some of the things we said and got Travis mad at us and us mad at Travis.
It was the story from before when they, okay, when she broke her promise of not to tell. Okay, gotcha.
Right.
Okay, continue on.
All right. So she says, you know, she's driving me crazy, something to that effect, get her out of here. And Travis saw this, okay? So it, as far as Travis knows, we like Jody, we want them to get married, we're like, go, go, go. Now he sees this, oh my gosh, she's driving me crazy, get her out of here. And now he's stunned. You know, now he's like, whoa. And he's like, what was that? And I grabbed my phone, and I just started laughing because it was so awkward, you know? It's like,
oh that is awkward,
and
yes.
Yeah, I was like, nothing, bro, nothing. And he's like, no, dude, like, what was that? And I go, Travis, nothing. Just don't worry about it. He's like, no, I'm worried about it. He's like, I read what she said. He's like, what's going on? I go, well, we need to talk to you. We need to talk to you about a lot of things. And he goes, well, dude, start talking, man. He's like, we got time. And I go, no, Sky and I both, there's some things we need to discuss with you about Jody. And so it was about bedtime now, and Jody goes over to her room. She's still pouting. She closes the door, and we say, Travis, come upstairs. We need to talk. So we're in our bedroom. The door is locked. The three of us are sitting on our bed. And we unload on him about how she, you know, was working it at the Hilton, and how she, you know, was very inappropriate with married men, and how she lied to us and lied to him, and you know, is really manipulating Travis, and how she's using these other guys to manipulate Travis. You know, some of these other guys that have showed up in the storyline and between Travis and Jody, and all of that. I mean, she would say to us, "Oh yeah, so and so tried to kiss me." But I probably shouldn't tell Travis, should I? We're like, no, what are you doing? You know? And then she would go and tell Travis.
Of
and,
course.
You know, hey, Abe Abdelhadi is you know, he's emailing me, or he wants to go out with me, but I'm not going to tell Travis. And then she tells Travis. So just all this stuff, and again, I don't know if the timeline's right. Don't hold me to that. But the point is, is that I do know this was in April of 2007, and we just told Travis, she's no good. You got to get out of this relationship. She's bad news. We really liked her. We're sorry, and we know this is hard on you, because he was considering getting into a relationship with her at this point. But he just takes it all in. Well, after several hours, my wife, again, sixth sense, she's just dialed in this way, and she whispers, she's out there. And Travis and I are like, what? And she's like, she's out there. She's listening to us. And she's whispering really, really quietly. Yes, she just felt it. And if you talk to her about it, she'll tell you she had this cold, evil feeling like someone was watching us. That was how she describes it.
That is
so
beyond
we changed
creepy.
The subject. Oh, very. I mean, it was one of the creepiest moments of my life. The first time, the second time was like one of the most evil experiences of my life. First time was just creepy. Second time was evil, frightening, and oh, my gosh, what are we going to do? So Travis, we changed the subject. And, oh, yeah, you know, what about Joe Blow? And, oh, yeah, he's so funny. He's a cool guy. And we're just, like, making up stuff to talk about so that she doesn't think we're talking about her. And while we're having this fictitious conversation over maybe 10, 15 seconds, Travis gets off the bed and opens the door, and there she is. Or, no, I'm sorry, she knocked. She did knock. So while we're having this conversation, there's a knock at the door. Travis opens it. I can't remember if he opened it or if she opened it. And if she opened it, then obviously the door wasn't locked. But that's not important. What's important is she looks in with this creepy, just imagine, you're at a friend's house, it's in the middle of the night, there's a private conversation being had on upstairs on the opposite side of the house, the lights are on, it's midnight, one, something like that, and you knock on the door, and you look in and say, is everything okay?
That, you know, that sounds like a horror movie. I mean, really, it, you know, right there, she sounds like a monster that just creeps me out.
Would you ever do that, Tricia? You're
never. God,
somebody else's
never.
House.
Never.
And that's, yeah, and these types of things began to happen all the time, okay? And that's why we're like, get out, Travis. Get out, bro. You've got to get out, get out, get out, get out. And he just couldn't see it, So then she says, "Is everything okay?" And Travis is like, "Everything's fine." He's like, "Look, go downstairs. I'll come say goodnight to you before I go to bed." You know, she's like, "Okay." She shuts his door, goes downstairs. Another 45 minutes or so go by, and again, we continue this conversation. Red flag, red flag, red flag, red flag. We're just letting him know everything that we had observed in her, you know, over the months. And Sky says, she says, "She's out there." She whispers again, "She's out there again. She's out there." And Travis jumps off the bed, pulls the door open, and there she is. She's this crazy, oh my gosh, this look that we saw.
I don't even know what to say.
Yeah, I don't need, I mean, I have chills from the top of my head to my feet right now retelling that story.
Oh,
just
creepy.
Oh, I mean, you talk about a horror movie. She could have killed us all right then and there. I mean, that's the look that was in her eyes.
And no doubt.
And we knew from, so she gets caught, and I don't remember, you know, what she said, what was said. It was just silent for a moment, and I can't remember who broke the silence. I'm sure Travis did. It was just, you know, it was one of those, I was just so shocked. I couldn't even believe it. And I'm fearful. Like, I'm thinking, you know, where's the gun? I mean, really. Like, I'm thinking, is my gun loaded? Where is it? Can I get it? It was, she went from suspect. She went from, you know, inconsistent. She went from a possible sociopath, psychopath to, oh, my gosh, she could kill us right now. Mm-hmm. I mean, that was, and a lot of times people, they embellish these stories, you know, 20/20 hindsight. I'm telling you, this is the story as it happened, when it happened. We told Travis, go handle her. Like, we're done. Y'all go do your thing. Like, go down there. Say, like, we're basically, get her out of here, is what we were telling Travis.
Okay.
And we locked the door, and Sky and I are laying in our bed, in our home, absolutely terrified of this woman in our house. And we had an open discussion, Sky and I. Like, are we safe? We went back and forth. I don't know. Or, like, is she harm
us?
You are truly
in fear of your life, and absolutely, you should have been, because there is no doubt in anybody's mind, Chris, that if she had wanted to, or if she could have, maybe she would have killed you. She's certainly capable, as we know. We're talking with Chris Hughes, one of Travis Alexander's best friends, and Chris is so gracious to come on the show tonight and tell us the real story behind all the junk and garbage that we've seen in court. And we've just found out that Jodi Arias was caught listening into a private conversation at Chris Hughes' home with his wife, Sky, and Travis, pretty much just her ear up to their bedroom door listening. She's just been caught. You tell Travis, go deal with her. We're done. You're laying there and you're thinking, are we safe? And you had every right to be terrified of this beast. So please, Chris Hughes, continue.
Yep. And Sky says, do we need to go and get the kids and bring them in here with us?
Oh,
that
wow.
I mean, that was the extent of it. And then I can't remember if she said it or I said it, but we said she could burn our house down tonight.
Oh.
That's where her look pushed us. That's where it took us. I've never seen anything like it before nor since. Never in my life. And by the way, I have looked evil in the face in other times of my life, and I've not seen anything like we saw that night.
You know, so, you think you have chills. I think everybody listening and in the chat room has chills. This is very, very scary for you. I'm glad. I'm really glad you're here to tell this story.
So that night, Sky says, she's like, I'm done. She's like, no, I'm not. We're done with her, Chris. She's like, I'm kicking her out. You know, tomorrow, I mean, Sky took it into her own hands. She was like, I got this handled. I'm going to tell her tomorrow, get out of my house. You know, I'm going to do everything I can to break you and Travis up and, you know, prevent this relationship from blossoming. Mm-hmm. And, we don't ever want to see you again, talk to you again. We don't want to have anything to do with you. So the next day, she takes Jodi into her room, which, you know, again, 20/20 hindsight is like, that was very I want to say brave, but maybe even reckless. You know,
well,
now that we know the end of the story, but
it could have been a huge tragedy.
So she took her in there and she told her. She was like, "Look, I've seen you lie, I've seen you manipulate, I've seen you work it with married men, I've seen you be possessive with Travis. You know, you come to our house unannounced, you invite yourself to go on a surfing trip with my brother. They didn't want you there, but you just insisted that you had." And she just did all this stuff, you know. And then last night, you're peeping on her. Like, so she lets her have it. And she said some pretty – my wife is a very, very sweet, kind person. But if the truth is unkind, she'll tell you the truth.
I got to tell you, Chris, in the chat room, everybody is saying, "We love Sky. Bring Sky." I mean, I love your wife. I've never met her. I adore her already. She is amazing.
Hey, let me tell you something. I married up. She is the brains and the class of the operation.
Oh, that's wonderful. So she tells Jody, I want you out. You're disgusting. And she's very brutally blunt with her. What does Jody do?
Yeah, so just imagine this. She doesn't defend herself ever. She just sits there with a stupid little smirk on her face, like we saw when Juan Martinez was questioning her on the stand. She's smirking, just sitting there, and she never defended herself against anything that Sky ever said. And really the only thing she asked was, "Are you going to tell Travis not to date me?" And Sky said, yes, I am. And then Jody starts to cry for the first time.
Mm-hmm.
Not when Sky said all these terrible things about her that were true. She didn't cry then. She only cried when Sky said, "Yes, I will definitely be telling Travis not to date you." And she's basically like, "Get your stuff and get out."
Mm-hmm.
Now, mind you, Travis is there, right? Because he was there sleeping upstairs. She was there sleeping downstairs. Let me clear this. Travis had his car, and she had her car. So they end this conversation. Sky thought it was going to be like a 5-10-minute conversation, but she just, you know, lets loose in there. She's like, "Get out." So they walk out. You know what Jody does? Let me ask you this, Trisha. Sky Hughes just kicked you out of her house. She told you how she feels about you. To say she doesn't like you is an understatement.
Mm-hmm.
She says, "Get out of my house." You both open the doors. You walk out. The front door is to your right about 10 feet. What would you do?
Oh, I'd be mortified, and I'd leave immediately. I would just
okay.
be horrified.
Jody Arias goes and sits at our kitchen table for an hour.
What? After your wife said, "Get out of my house," she goes to your kitchen table. Oh, my God. You must have just been furious and scared and every other emotion like that. Just, what did you do? Oh, my God.
She just sat there, and we said to Travis, "Dude, it was awkward. You know, I'm like, I love you, man. You know, like, you're my brother, and I love you. But you got to get that thing out of my house, like, now, and don't ever bring her back. Like, you're welcome anytime. She can never come back." And so he says, "Hey, Jody, let's," you know, he got her to stand up, go out front. They talked for a few minutes, and they both ended up leaving. And sadly, our relationship was not the same for many, many months after that.
Yeah, I can imagine.
Because now he's got this quandary. He still really likes her, and in fact was right there at the point where he wanted to commit to her. And I can't remember if he already had. Maybe you know the timeline. I can't remember when they were officially boyfriend, girlfriend. But it was about this time, you know. So he's like, his two best friends and business partners. And, you know, I mean, we loved him. We love him like family.
Right.
But he can't come over with his girlfriend anymore, or with this girl, whatever they were at the time. So, yeah, it changed the relationship. So let's fast forward. So from that point forward, I had no interaction with Jody Arias. We avoided her at all costs. Towards the end, I got the stalker email. Now's the time.
Now's the time for the stalker. Okay, let me remind you. Stalker email. Go ahead.
Okay. So Travis calls Sky one day, and it's about this. It was after we kicked her out of the house, but I'm not certain.
Mm-hmm.
Travis calls Sky and says, I'm freaking out right now. And she says, why? And he says, because Jody just got this email from some anonymous guy, and Jody's really scared, and I'm really scared. And Sky says, well, read it to me. So he proceeds to read this email from some anonymous guy, and here's basically what it says. Now, you tell me who this sounds like, okay?
Okay.
It's from anonymous male stalker to Jody Arias, okay? Jody, you are so amazing, and you are so beautiful, and you are such an incredible artist, and you are so talented, and what a wonderful photographer you are. And I've been watching you, and I've been following you, and Travis doesn't deserve you. Travis is an idiot. Travis doesn't know how wonderful you are. Travis takes you for granted, and Travis can't protect you all the way over there in Arizona. I've been watching you, and Travis can't protect you, and I will have you. You will be mine, and there's nothing Travis can do about it because he's
brother.
All the way in Arizona. Yeah, come on, A-Train.
Oh, yeah. Oh, that would be hilarious if it wasn't so sick and disgusting because of the backstory. I mean, that's just ridiculous.
I know. Well, and you said it. Hilarious. I love that you said that because that Sky laughed out loud. She threw her head back and had a good belly laugh. And he goes, why are you laughing? She goes, Travis, really? Really, Travis? You have to ask why I'm laughing? He's like, no, this is serious. This is scary. And somebody's stalking her, and they're watching her, and they're going to, you know, injure her or hurt her. Travis, does that email not scream Jody Arias?
Yeah.
Jody wrote that. She's been crying for months because you won't invite her to move to Arizona. You
mm-hmm.
know? Like, she wrote that. He's like, no, Jody would never do that. She would never do that.
Oh,
nah,
no.
Nah, nah, nah.
No.
Unfortunately. Yeah, she would never do that. So, and again, I don't know when exactly this happened, so give me some slack on that.
Absolutely.
The human calendar. But the fact is that it happened. And we told him that was Jody, and there's no way he could see that. So that's the stalker story.
Then
there's the slashing of Travis's tires, and I believe... Your listeners could probably tell this story way better. But here's what we do know, is that his tires got slashed, I believe, in December of 07. It happened again when he was out. I think he was at Lisa's house. Tires get slashed. They got slashed again a little later. Lisa's
mm-hmm.
tires get slashed, when she's out front at Travis's house. But there's this night where Lisa's upset. I can't remember what happened, but she was very scared about the tire slashing and Jody and all of that. And
mm-hmm.
she asked Travis to stay the night. I need you to stay here tonight. And so he did. And the next morning, and I don't remember if this story has gotten a lot of light on it, but
mm-hmm.
the next morning she's in the shower. Travis, her computer's on, and her email is loading, and there's this email there from another anonymous person. And it says, basically, to Lisa, you're a whore. You're a pathetic whore, and you call yourself a Mormon.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, how dare you have a priesthood holder in your house overnight? And just this craziness.
Mm-hmm.
And that was Jody. You know? I mean, she was in full-blown stalking mode at this point. Following
right.
him around on dates. And, you know, people that are really paying attention know this, but not everybody knows this. And Travis's blog that he was writing before he died, one of the things he said in there was how he wanted to get married because he hated the dating thing, because he said, I hate sitting across the table, the dinner table, from somebody and wondering if she's an axe murderer.
Oh, no.
So... Yeah, so towards the end, you know, he told Dr. Hyatt and the Hyatt brothers, who were also good friends of his, you know, he'd go over there every Sunday for Sunday dinner, and unfortunately even took Jody over there a couple times. But he'd go over there for Sunday dinners, and he said, look, guys, if I ever turn up dead one day, Jody did it.
He did, you know? Actually, I mean, say that.
Yeah, he's like, she's going to get me, you know, like he knew, you know. I mean, that last season of his life, he was dialed in, and then the people ask, all the haters are like, well, why did he keep seeing her? And it's like, look, if anybody's ever had a relationship, and I've never had a relationship like Travis had with Jody and Jody had with Travis, but it was manic.
Mm-hmm.
And it was...
Oh, that's yeah, everybody's done that.
Yeah, it was...
Most people have had that. Not like Jody Arias, but they've had relationships where it's very up and down, and the highs are the best highs and the lows are the worst lows. I think that's really common. And also, if I could just interject this, Chris, I don't know Travis, but from what you've been telling me and our audience about him, an amazing man. Do you think there was a little bit of, you know, kind of the should I or shouldn't I? You know, I think he was sexually attracted to her, and that was obviously a huge part of it, but he knew he needed to get away from her, you know, so it was kind of like the good and the evil pulling at him both. Is that a fair assumption?
Totally, yeah, I believe that. And here's the thing, I don't know what it's like to be a woman because I've been a man most of my life.
So, there's been those moments, right.
I don't know what that's like, but I know how, you know, the hormones work and testosterone works in a man.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I know what it's like over the years having, you know, when I was single and dating people. And when you get to the end of that relationship and it's like, I want out, you know, but I'm really attracted to her, you know, I really like this part about her. And so you're doing that tightrope, you know, that walk where you're trying to figure out, am I going to go left or am I going to go right? And it's a tough place to be. And she was so dirty. You know, and people go, oh, Travis was just as dirty. We heard all the tapes and all that. And I'm gonna give you that. But let me tell you this. Before Jody Arias, Travis didn't go there. And there's no evidence of Travis going there.
Exactly.
Did he have intimate relationships with people? Yes, he did. But was he a super freak and doing all that? No. You know, that's Jody Arias. Look, I'll just say this and move on. Jody, it was not only KY that Jody introduced to Travis. I'll just leave it at that, you know?
Right.
Where do we need to go from here? But, yeah, so he knew he was being stalked. He knew that there was some danger there. But then
and he really felt like he really truly felt like he was going to lose his life to her. That was a sincere thought that he had, correct?
He kept saying that.
It was believable. It wasn't just, you know, how you say, oh, my gosh, they're going to kill me, that type of thing.
Right.
It sounds like, from what you're telling me, he really believed in his heart that his fate was set. He was scared.
Yeah, I do. And so the question about, you know, the big fight, the May 26th,
mm-hmm.
and what was that about?
Yes,
something interesting for your listeners is that when I found out Travis was found dead, we were in Cancun. We got a phone call from Dave Hall at 4 o'clock in the morning. He said, "Chris, I've got bad news." And I said, "What?" He says, "Travis is dead." And the first thing out of my mouth was, "Jody Arias did this."
You just knew. You had no doubt.
No doubt at all whatsoever. The next morning, we're on the phone with investigators telling them, don't you look at anybody else. You look at Jody Arias. She did this. She did this. Mm-hmm. She did this. But so after we get home, that was kind of a side note. But when we get home, I called Travis's webmaster. His name's Sean. And he was my webmaster as well. And I said, "Sean, do you have Travis's passcode to get into his blog?" And he said, "Yeah." And, of course, he knew Travis had been found dead and everything. So he said, "Yeah, it's this." And he sent me his passcodes. So I tried that same passcode on his Gmail account, and it let me in. Because at this point, the investigators had told me, Flores told me that they weren't really looking at Jody. They were looking at some other people. Yeah. And I said, no, Flores, it was Jody. He goes, we got these couple other people. But what he was doing was he was just trying to put everybody off. They knew
right.
it was Jody from the get-go. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But he was just trying to disorient everybody.
That's good police. That's what they do.
Yeah, good police work. So I got so upset at that, not knowing he was doing police work. We came home. I called Sean, got the information, got into his email, because I was determined to find proof that Jody did this.
Mm-hmm.
And here's what we found. We found, obviously, that May 26th. Oh, and by the way, we read every email between Travis Alexander and Jody Arias, and most other emails between Travis and other girls, and we read every line of Google chat, and there were lots of them between
mm-hmm.
Travis and Jody. And just as a side note, never once did Jody ever say anything about pedophilia or abuse. Never
really?
Once did she say anything about, hey, my finger is healing just fine. You know,
mm-hmm.
never once did she say, hey, I'm still upset about you smacking me in the face. Never, never, ever did we see. And as a matter of fact, the only confrontations we ever saw in all of those emails, in all of those chats, was Travis confronting Jody. Let me
really?
Give you an example.
Okay.
Let me give you an example. Travis sends an email from Travis Alexander to Travis Alexander. Okay, now that's odd, isn't it?
Yes.
Okay. He sends an email from Travis Alexander to Travis Alexander. The subject says, Jody, you're caught. The body says, get out of my email. We'll talk later.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
So he knew. He knew she was reading his emails.
Yes, he caught her on multiple occasions in their reading of emails. She says that, yes, because of this breach of trust, we swapped passcodes so that we can trust each other. That is nonsense. That is nonsense. You know, they never did that. She hacked. She stole. She admitted to us long before, to my wife, you know, that she was getting into his Facebook and email accounts and emailing herself all these interactions with Travis and
mm-hmm.
these other ladies. So we saw that. We also saw this confrontation on the 26th. And here's what we couldn't find out. And by the way, Nermi would have you believe that Travis was calling Jody names, you know, these terrible names all throughout the relationship, every
mm-hmm.
day or every week, or this ongoing and regular. Not true. All those bad names happened on the 26th. Travis said to her, in addition to the names, and we've seen some of this in testimony, you hurt me worse than the passing of my own father.
Oh, my goodness.
You're a liar. You are a sociopath. You're the worst thing that's ever happened to me. You scammed me. You know, and we didn't know, Trisha. For years, we couldn't find out what the fight was about. What did she do that was so awful? But you know one thing she said, and this didn't come out in court, one thing she said in there is, I'm going to call my attorney on Monday.
She said that?
She said that in this little, you know, back and forth, and he's so mad at her because of whatever it was that she did. She did something so vile and so despicable. She betrayed him, right? You betrayed me, he says. And we read all the chats and the emails, and we're like, gosh, what was it? What was it? What was
mm-hmm.
it? And we never knew until trial. And now, and I don't know for sure, but you know what? Here's my theory.
I want to hear it.
I think, and a lot of other people have this theory as well, and this is what your listener asked about, that she said to him something like this. Just so you know, I know you're into Meany Hall and all that. Just so you know, I have our May 10th sex talk on tape, and Meany's going to get a copy.
I bet you're right. That's exactly
something
it.
Like that. Maybe not exactly that. Maybe it was this, and I don't know if this time frame is right. I don't have any notes in front of me, by the way. Maybe it was, Travis, I lost my phone. Do you remember when she lost her phone?
I don't remember the date, but I remember. Right.
Yeah. So I can see her doing this. This is like Jody classic. You know, call him up crying, and he's bothered by her, right? And why are you crying, Jody? Oh, I lost my phone. Well, go get a new one. Well, no, Travis, it's not that simple. Well, why is it not that simple? Because I recorded our sex conversation on May 10th, and it's on my phone, and I lost it.
There you go.
Right? So what is she calling her attorneys about? Maybe Travis says to her, I'm sure he said, you know, a lot of things, but you recorded us?
Can you imagine the betrayal? Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, and he uses that word betrayal. You scammed me. You're the worst thing that's ever happened to me. You hurt me. You hurt me worse than the passing of my own father. So I can see Travis going, you know, you didn't have my permission to do that. That's illegal. You know, I'm going to sue you, Jody. I'm going to sue you. Who do you think you are? You nuts, right? And I think that's why this thing shows up that says I'm going to call my attorney on Monday. You know, or whatever it was. I don't know if it was Monday, but the next day or Monday or what have you.
Correct.
Right, so, and that's just a theory. That's just a theory. But we couldn't figure it out, having accessed all of his,
everything.
That makes
perfect sense. I think we're talking with Chris Hughes, one of Travis Alexander's best friends, and Chris is being so gracious in letting us in and showing us exactly what a wonderful man Travis Alexander was, and what happened leading up to his murder. We're talking about emails that you found after he was murdered, right after he was murdered, and in it he tells Jody, "You've betrayed me. It was worse than when my father died," and obviously something bad happened. And I think everybody thinks that he found out about the recording, and I think that's safe to say, because what else could it really be, right, Chris?
Yeah, it had to be that, because, again, we read all the emails and all the chats, and there was zero evidence of anything else. It had to be that. So then just look at the calendar. My wife did this, and it's so interesting. She plotted everything down in a timeline. So you have the May 10th sexcapades. You have the May 26th confrontation, you know, where he has made it, you know, it is, we're done, right? We are done. And by the way, people say, well, why would he have agreed to have her come over? Number one, Jody said that. I'm not convinced that Travis even knew she was coming. She said it herself. She snuck into his house and watched him for 10 or 15 seconds unknowingly. I don't believe that. You know,
I don't either. I think she just showed up. I think she showed up.
Yeah, she showed up. So, so just look at the timeline. The 26th, he says it's over. Now she knows that not only is he not taking her to Cancun, to Chichen Itza, which is in the book of, you know, all the places to see before you die, which they were checking off together, which, you know, that in and of itself just had to be such a blow, you know, to her ego. Mm-hmm. But so she's losing him by bits and pieces. But on May 26th, he makes it final. It's over. You're a sociopath. You're evil. You're the worst thing that's ever happened to me. And after that, then we have the gas cans. She's arranging gas cans with Daryl. We know that happened, I believe, on the 28th. We know that she had arranged about – Ryan told me that she had arranged the Utah trip about a week from the day she showed up, which would have put you around the 29th, okay? Right? 29th-ish, 28th, 29th. We've got – what else do we have? I don't have any notes. But the gun gets stolen right there in those same few days. She was premeditating this murder right after that interaction on the 26th. And let me give you something interesting that didn't come out in court that shows me that she was premeditating, that the ball was already in motion. So Travis says all these things to her. And she like one of the things he says is your parents must be real proud of you.
Mm-hmm.
In this exchange. And she says, you know, my parents aren't proud of me. And, you know, all the things that Travis said, and again, we don't need to go into it because
right.
he, you know, hit it 181 times. But, you know, all those things that were said, and she never comes back and says, hey, buddy, that's not true.
Exactly.
That's not true.
Right.
That's not true. And you know what else she doesn't say?
What?
She doesn't say, well, you're an abuser.
Yeah, you've abused me. And what about me catching you looking at those pictures of boys and nothing?
Exactly. She doesn't come back and say, oh, yeah, bro, well, you're a pedophile. Oh, yeah,
right.
You broke my finger. No, none of that stuff. All she says is, you know, my parents aren't proud of me. That's all she says.
She knows.
And
she
then,
knows.
Yeah, she knows. So then it's over. Okay, they go dark. Check this out. The very next email from Jody, I don't know if it was hours later or a day later, says this. In the subject, to Travis from Jody. In the subject, it says, two things you're wrong about. Now, she had a long list of things that Travis could have been wrong about, right?
Mm-hmm, right.
Remember all that was said. Long list of things that Travis could have been wrong about. The only two things that she says to him that he was wrong about that I failed to mention a moment ago, she says, I did not slash your tires and I did not steal your journals.
And that's all she can come up with.
Yeah. Now, here's what's interesting. Why did she not defend herself, her character, her you know, her reputation, the way her parents look at her? Why did she not defend herself on any of those things? Why these two things? I did not slash your tires, and I did not steal your journals. Here's the answer. Those are aggressive acts against Travis.
Right.
And she wanted to go on the record and say that those two aggressive acts that you think I took against you, I did not take those two aggressive acts against you.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So the ball was rolling. She's already premeditating. She's already cleaning up her tracks. Okay, then she kills him. We find out she kills him. We get into the email, and do you know what we see? We see this email that says, hey, baby, from Jody to Travis, I know you're in Cancun. You're probably having a blast. I'm going to sleep in your bed like I always do, and I'm going to eat your yummy oatmeal, and I can't wait to see you when you get back.
Oh, my God. I didn't know that. So did she write that on his computer or
no? She sent it from either her phone or her computer because it was from her to him. But
pretending
we read
pretending like he was she knew he was at Cancun and she was never at his house. And gotcha.
Yep, Jody was clueless. You know, so
right.
And here's the thing, and I'm getting off topic here, but
that's okay. No, you need to talk, and we want to hear you talk.
She never told a soul. She never told a soul that, you know, she never confided in a friend. Now, I understand she wants to, quote, unquote, defend Travis's reputation. Yeah, it looks like she's defending his, Travis's reputation.
Mm-hmm.
She never confided in a friend. Travis attacked me, and it was self-defense, right?
Right.
Never, ever, ever told anybody. Her whole thing was she killed him in cold blood. She knew she was going to kill him. She started setting it up on May 26th. That's why she sent that email, said, hey, I didn't take those aggressive acts towards you. She gets gas cans, she steals a 25, she what else was it, I missed it. Anyway, so she starts to to plan all of this. She goes and she does it. She calls him afterwards and, hey, baby, and blah, 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 and we're going to go on this trip. It's going to be so fun. And then she sends an email. This is all her covering up her tracks. This is not an abused woman. This is not someone who acted in the heat of passion. This is somebody who premeditated a cold-hearted murder. She executed it, as sloppy as it may have been. She's arrogant. She thinks, you know, she is the Jody Arias. And she will not be cut, and no jury will ever convict me. And she's writing these emails about, Beatty, I know you're in Cancun and all this stuff. I mean, we had no doubt from days after we found out he was dead that, you know, she did it.
How did
it just was so clear to me.
You knew immediately, basically, that it was Jody. And we're talking with Chris Hughes, a best friend of Travis Alexander's, and he's giving us the real whole story behind the man, Travis. And, again, we appreciate you coming on. The memorial service, did everybody know by then that she was the one, or were you talking amongst yourselves saying, this has got to be Jody, there's nobody else? Did that come up that quickly?
It's such an interesting question. Really quick, I don't want to forget to say this because I need to, you know, do this for legal reasons.
Mm-hmm.
What we saw in all those emails and chats, the only time Travis was upset with Jody or said or did, you know, said things that were not, what did DeMarte say, healthy communication pattern or whatever it was,
mm-hmm.
was when Travis caught her lying to him, when Travis caught her sneaking into his house, when Travis caught her in his emails, when Travis found out that she had hacked his Facebook account.
Mm-hmm.
You know, those were the only times. And if our theory is correct, the worst of it was when he found out that she had recorded
the
events of May 10th. So, again, I want to reiterate that this is not a guy who just flew off the handle because he's, quote-unquote, as the defense and Jody would have us believe, an abusive guy. No, he is a guy who experiences human emotion just like all of us, except for
mm-hmm.
Jody. Jody only cries when it has to do with her. She cannot, has an inability to experience empathy or pain, you know, for anybody else's suffering, only her own.
Exactly.
So that said, it's like, no, if people look at that, oh, what a terrible guy. No. Put it all in context. You tell me what you would do if somebody violated you in that way. You
mm-hmm.
know, and get this, Tricia. You remember when he's saying some of the most offensive of the things in the audio recording? What does she do? She giggles like a little girl.
Right.
And says, what was that? Say that again? She wants him to say it again because she's gonna share this audio with somebody.
Mm-hmm.
She said,
exactly.
Say it again, Travis. So, anyway, I just wanted to make that real clear, that if ever Travis did experience an unhealthy communication pattern, just look at what Jody did. You know, Travis hasn't been able to speak since 2008, and
mm-hmm.
we need to be reminded of that.
Exactly. And
so let's go to the memorial. Go ahead.
Okay.
Memorial.
No, please go. You go.
So the memorial, and it looks like I'm dominating your whole show here. But
well, we love it. I'm telling you, we have the most people in the chat room we've ever had. The chat room is overflowing, and everybody is saying, keep going, keep going, keep going. You have the floor, and we want to hear what you have to say.
Okay, very good. So, yeah, the memorial, there was two. You know, there was something there in Arizona, and there was one in California. We didn't go to the one in Arizona because we were involved obviously in the one in California.
Mm-hmm.
So yes, we were telling people, we were very, very vocal, and I won't mention anybody, but there's been some people that have showed up on the media and other people, friends, people that we're close to, that were angry at us and calling us judgmental because we were telling them that Jody did this. You're like, you
mm-hmm.
can't say that. That's a heinous thing to say about somebody. No. It's not a heinous thing to say if it's true. You don't know. I know she did it.
Mm-hmm.
And we were being careful about who we told, you know, that we had access to the emails. Oh, and by the way, we called the investigator and said, hey, might want to look at these emails. And he said, how did you know about those emails? We said, oh, we have his codes, and, you know, relinquished all the codes, and they locked them down from that point forward. We didn't make a copy. We've not
mm-hmm.
had access ever since. And also an interesting side note, in a hearing that occurred a couple of years ago, it was suggested that maybe Sky and I had, deleted some of those emails. Our thing was, okay, first of all, Gmail doesn't delete anything. Second of all, why on God's green earth would we ever delete anything? It's all in there pointing towards Jody Arias.
Right.
You know, my wife actually took the stand. It was so great. She's just so good this way. But Nurmi asked her, why did you access Mr. Alexander's email account? And she said something to the effect that, to the effect of, well, because we knew that Jodi Arias did it, and we were looking for evidence that she did it, and we found it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and she kind of threw it out there as objection, and, you know, they tried to get rid of that. But
right.
So just interesting backstories. So the memorial, so yeah, so we're telling people that Jodi did it, and some people are getting upset with us. Some people are sharing information with Jodi. You know, like there's a communication trail going back to Jodi, because we all kind of ran in similar circles. Although Jodi was, you know, not in our circle, there were people in our circle that were also in Jodi's circle.
Mm-hmm.
So there were several people at the memorial in Arizona that absolutely knew that she did it. They were convinced of that. And just an interesting story, Jodi was going to fly. She was going to fly into Ontario, California, and she called a friend of ours to get a ride for the California, for the funeral.
Oh,
and
no.
We heard that she was looking for a ride, and our friend actually called us, and we're like, don't do it. They're like, why not? We said, she's suspect number one. She
mm-hmm.
did this. Just take our word for it. We're not going to get into it. And just out of respect for that relationship, this individual said, hey, I'm not going to pick her up. So he calls her up and says, sorry, you're going to have to find another ride. So she
mm-hmm.
calls another one of our friends. And we find out that she called this friend. And we called this friend up and said, just so you know, Jodi did this to Travis. Please, don't you dare go pick her up from the airport. Well, Jodi was completely broke. You know, she always was broke
mm-hmm.
Because she never worked. She never worked. I mean, I
yeah.
just, that's why she had all those jobs, and she quit and bounced around and got fired. And yeah, so she didn't have any money. So, but she was flying, and that was the story she told these two friends of ours that were supposed to pick her up from the airport but decided not to. But then she called other people and says, yeah, I was driving down and I got a flat tire.
So she
lied and changed her story because she couldn't find somebody to pick her up from the airport, which made her look really bad. You know, she
yeah.
couldn't find one person in California to pick her up from the airport. I mean, how pathetic
that,
is that?
That is very pathetic. So she can't say, I couldn't find a ride and I couldn't afford a taxi cab, so I couldn't go. She would never admit to that.
Yeah, exactly. So she doesn't show up, which was great.
Good.
Because Sky said, I'll end up in jail. You know, I mean,
oh,
Sky
yeah.
was just irate. She's like, she cannot show her face at this event. And so it was an amazing, amazing celebration of Travis's life. And the quality of people that Travis attracts, you know, had attracted into his life, barring Jodi, you know, he just had fabulous people in his life. And this funeral was a who's who of business and, you know, of course, our company, and
mm-hmm.
so many people were there to celebrate him. And it was just a testament to who
he
was.
Right.
Yeah. And it was a beautiful experience. So, we called the investigators. These are just interesting stories, but we just said, so you're not looking at Jodi. Well, we got these other people. What do you know about this roommate? We're like, no, it's not him. And I said, look, we live on a 40-acre horse ranch. You know, like, if I come home from a seminar night and I forgot to feed the horses, I got to go out there on 40 acres with fields all around the place and feed these horses. Meanwhile, you got Jodi Arias on the loose, who I know did, you know, we know did this. Like, am I safe? Are we safe to come out of her house? And he made the comment and said something like, she can't take a deep breath without us knowing about it.
So there, you know, and Chris, that leads me to a question that somebody wanted to ask you about that. Do you think that Jodi Arias was planning to kill somebody else right before she was arrested? And if so, who do you think was in her sight?
I don't know. That scares me to think about. She might have been coming to our house. She might
that's
have been
what
going
I was
to,
thinking. You know,
yeah,
you were the
I mean, when
you
I,
guys
when
were,
I,
yeah.
Yeah, no, go ahead.
No, I'm just agreeing with you. You guys were the ones that Sky was the one that, you know, told her the truth. And if there's one thing that she hates, that Jodi Arias hates, is the truth. So, it scares me to think who she might have been thinking about killing. But there's no doubt that she would have done it again if she could have. So, you agree?
Yeah, why not? Oh, yeah, why not? I mean, it was in her blood, and you know, I think she enjoyed it. Look at the photos. She
mm-hmm.
she enjoyed it. She was like a kid in a candy store. And I know that's grotesque, but that is the reality. She
yeah.
was at an amusement park. She had a time extinguishing the unique hue of Travis Alexander and doing it in the most repulsive, disgusting, evil, inhumane way. So, yes, I that is a fearful thought of where she was headed. I believe that she would have snuffed out Lisa Andrews had had Lisa not, you know, backstepped out of that relationship, had she not called it off, and thank God she did. It, you know, a couple of interesting points, and again, I'm speaking from no notes, and just some things that I thought were interesting is she talked about how Travis liked the braids. You know, she wore those braids because Travis liked them, and I know you've probably seen those photos of her and is it Bobby Juarez where she's got these. She's not only is she wearing braids. Do you know what shirt she was wearing?
Oh my gosh, I'm afraid to ask.
Bobby? She was wearing a Superman shirt.
Oh brother,
this is her in high school. She's talking about how Travis liked the, you know, Spider-Man and in the braids, right? Well, we got a photo from her as a kid, her as a teenager, with Bobby Juarez in braids and in a superhero shirt. And by the way, if you see that picture, it looks like there's cocaine in a line right behind them. That is a whole nother topic.
Doesn't
you know, the girl who grows
me.
Pot, yeah, grows pot and makes her own liquor as a child. Who does that? So,
yeah, exactly.
But then the other thing is this, and again, let's all use common sense and let's put the light of truth on the situation. Jody, that fateful day of January, I believe, 21st, the day which was followed by the journal entry on the 24th that says, I haven't written in several days because nothing noteworthy has happened, right? But on the 21st, is the was that the pedophile thing or the broken finger? Or was it both?
It might have been both. I think it might have been both.
I think it was both.
Yes.
Yeah, I think it was both. So first of all, let's talk about the pedophile thing and let's talk about the broken finger.
Okay.
The pedophile story has changed three times, and the story that it is today is unrecognizable to the story that it was originally. And the original story was so repugnant and so repulsive, I'm not going to talk about it. I'm not going to give it legs tonight.
Okay.
But that was the first story that Jodi Arias came up with, you know, when she first began to change this. You know, first she wasn't there, then it was the two, you know, mass people that broke in, and then it was, oh, sorry, the truth is he was a pedophile and it was self-defense. So the first story is in no way related, okay?
Okay.
That story was proven fraudulent. Okay, there's that the fraudulent letters that we've heard about, and I'm not going to talk a lot about this. Here's what I will tell you, that it was disgusting and repugnant, and it was looked at by NERMI's people, and NERMI called my wife and said, here's this, you know, letter, and it has been 100% verified and validated that Travis wrote this. And we have other irrefutable evidence that Travis, that the allegations are true, okay? Well, Sky didn't know that a prosecutor could lie to her, or excuse me, attorney could lie to her. Yeah, she's just like, oh, my gosh. And so she's digesting this. Well, we have a friend who's 40 years CSI, and we call him up, and I said, hey, I need a handwriting expert because this is nonsensical. This is just crazy talk, you know. We knew it was nonsense, but we wanted to disprove what it was that NERMI had said. So we called a friend and we said, we need your best handwriting guy. He gives us a phone number. We call this guy up and we say, I don't remember if we called him or emailed him, but the communication was, here's what we were told. It's a digital copy of a letter. It's a bad quality digital copy of a letter. And the first thing he said is, who has the original? I need the original. We said, there is no original. Nobody, this was, you know, we believe, concocted on a computer. And apparently what had happened is she stole his journals. You know, so they're out there somewhere. I don't know where they are.
Let me ask you real quickly. That's one of the questions. We don't know where the journals are now, right?
Yeah, I don't know. That's not something I've inquired about. But my belief is she didn't steal all of them, but she has some of them.
Okay,
and
so anyway, she took his journal.
Yeah, but she's in prison or in jail. Someone on the outside probably, well, it doesn't matter, but somebody on the outside scans those letters, creates a font out of those letters, mm-hmm. and starts, you know, writing this letter in Photoshop or whatever, just lining it up, A, B, C, D, putting the words together. So he says, wait a minute, there's no original? We said, no. He says, no, if somebody told you there, that this has been verified 100% and there's no original, you were lied to. Mm-hmm. We're like, no way. Yeah. Yeah, no, you were lied to. He says, I'm good, and I can't give 100% even if I've got the original.
Exactly.
I can't give, you know? So and then we've heard through the rumor mill that, you know, that letter was thrown out. Jody tried to get it in. They said, no, this is clearly a fraud. It was thrown out. So mm-hmm. that was story number one, okay? Then story number two that she tells Lavalette and Dr. Samuels, don't you find it interesting that both Lavalette and Samuels, in their notes, it says that he, and I don't even want to put him in the story, but the Travis was at his computer doing this stuff. Okay, and I'm not even, again, I don't want to talk about it, but
exactly.
Those have been following this. No. They both have that in their notes, that Jody walks in the room and catches Travis on the computer looking at these images, you know, doing what Jody said he was
mm-hmm.
doing. Both of them have that in their reports. And both of them said on the stand, oh, well, I that was a mistake. That was an error. The actual story is that Jody walked into the room and saw Travis doing that to images that had been that were on his bed, right? Now, we all know that's a lie. Okay?
Right.
So they're trying to change. Now, why did they have to change that story? Here's why. Because it was discovered at a hearing years ago that computer analysts went and looked at Travis's hard drive, and there was zero
right.
pornography of any kind. Mm-hmm. And I personally, in 2010, talked to the guy who analyzed Travis's computer. And I said, but yeah, I said, so nothing? No man, no woman, no child, nothing, Chris. I'm telling you, squeaky clean, like one of the mm-hmm. cleanest computers I've ever seen. And I said, yeah, but he could have, I mean, people can wipe their computers clean, right? You know, they've got that software, you can
uh-huh.
wipe it clean. And he goes, oh yeah, Travis, he could have done that, and I would know. He goes, when you wipe your computer clean, it leaves a scar.
Mm-hmm.
It leaves a scar, and I don't remember if he said this or if I kind of understood it this way, but like rings in a tree, you know, you can see every time that hard drive was wiped. And I asked him, was his hard drive ever wiped? And he said, no, Chris. He said that hard drive was squeaky clean. It had never been wiped. It was in pristine condition. There was nothing on there. And we all know that anybody who's a pedophile has, you know, you're going to find something.
Yeah.
In their
Absolutely.
House, on their computer, yeah, in their attic, under their bed, somewhere,
mm-hmm.
right? There's going to be some breadcrumbs.
Nothing. And his computer was taken apart by the best. Not only did he have no pictures, Travis Alexander did not even erase, and he didn't wipe out his hard drive. And so Jody now has to change her story in that he was on the bed and he had printed out, or some, he just had the pictures there. And both of her experts testify in their notes that Travis was at the computer, because that's what Jody originally said, and she changed her story. And those two experts, and I even hate to use the word experts to describe them,
yeah.
they lied when they said, oh, I just assumed it was a computer. They lied, and that is just disgusting.
Yep, disgusting. I mean, it's like, look, do your job, but don't sell your soul. And that's what
exactly.
they did.
They sold their soul. Yes, they did.
Sexperts, or whatever you want to call them, sold their souls.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, that's what happened. And, you know, going back to the pedophile thing again, the pedophile and the finger, I want to cover both of those, and then,
okay.
and then we can kind of wind down. But so 21st, these things happen, I believe, and then on the 24th, nothing noteworthy has happened. So here's my question for you, Trisha, and all your very smart, intelligent, and an intellectually honest listeners.
Okay.
Jody works in the public eye. She's a waitress. She has a broken finger. Travis allegedly kicked her, the abusive guy that she says he is, kicked her, and she now has a broken finger. Well, guess what? She waits tables for a living. They've had 5 years to find one human being that saw Jody's broken finger, that heard her wince, that heard her say, hey, could you help me carry this tray of fajitas out because my finger's hurting and I can't take it. They couldn't find a person in 5 years that could testify that, oh, yeah, I remember back in January-ish of 2008. Oh, yeah, Jody, you know, she had a finger wrapped, or we had to help her carry out. You know, she had a big table of 15 people, and we had to help her carry out all those drinks because she couldn't straighten out her finger because it was hurting her because she had just broken it.
That's right.
You have to say Travis did it. They can't find a person. So, and I know I'm preaching to the choir. We all know those are lies. But, you know, since the closing of the defense was, the theme was common sense and light of truth, let's put some common sense on that. So that's a lie. The finger was a lie. Not one human being can come forward and say that they saw that. Compared to the day after the murder, she's sitting at a table with a bunch of my friends in Utah at Ryan Burns' side, and she has her fingers wrapped in gauze.
She does?
She cut them. Yes, the night after she killed Travis, she drives to Utah to be with Ryan Burns. She goes to dinner with all the people after the seminar. And one of the guys, Mark, who's a policeman, notices she has bandages on her fingers and says to her, what'd you do to your fingers? And you know what she says? She says a story we've never heard before.
What's
she
that?
She says, oh, I'm a bartender and I, you know, cut it on a margarita glass or something. You know, I'm a klutz. She said, I'm a klutz and I, you know, cut it on a. You know, margarita glass or something. So a different version of some
totally
of the other.
Yes.
Yeah, different version. Okay, so then the pedophile thing again. Let's go back to that.
And
then let's look at the text messages. And I know Juan did a great job doing this, but I want to extract it again because I think we can open this up a little in this conversation. But so just think about this. You experienced that, Trisha. You walk in and you see this man that you're in love with, that you want to have babies with, that you're manipulating to marry you.
Yes.
You walk in and you see him doing what she claimed he was doing. Later on that night, would you say, you know, send a text that just says, you know, hey, what are you doing tonight? You're going to family home evening. Can we switch cars?
No, I would be so mortified. I wouldn't know what to do. I would not just chit-chat with him. If I found the man I love doing that, I would be appalled. I'd probably call the police, you know.
Right.
He wouldn't chit-chat with him over text. For goodness sake, that's just ridiculous.
But what does Jody do? What's her therapy? She got him, allegedly, she got him some pamphlets and gave him sex. That's her therapy. It's like,
That helps.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's the other thing. And I said this on Dr. Drew the other night. I don't know a whole lot of pedophiles. You know, but my understanding of pedophiles is they have a type that they like. So my question for all the intellectually dishonest people that are buying her story, they try to say, well, Travis liked prepubescent girls. Okay.
Right.
That's what they try to show us from this tape, this audio tape they have. But then it's like, wait, no. Actually, January 21st shows us that it's actually prepubescent boys.
They don't.
Yeah, but actually what it really is it's surgically enhanced full-grown women. So which is it? Because my understanding of pedophiles is it's not the smorgasbord. Children, adults, developed, underdeveloped. No.
Right.
Again, I'm not an expert. I could be wrong. But
you're not.
It's just so interesting to me that it's like, well, yeah, here he is this way. And no, actually he's this way. No, actually he's this way. And it's just so ridiculous. So anyway, I should probably just stop right there. But we all know, and let me turn the corner and just say this. You know, when people die in our lives, we have a tendency to glorify them. We have a tendency to sometimes maybe even deify them. We have a tendency to forget the negative and just accentuate the positive. And I understand that aspect of psychology. I get that. I really get that. Here's what I want to say about Travis. Being aware of that, I want to say this. Travis wasn't perfect. And I'm never going to go anywhere and say that he was.
Mm-hmm.
And Travis had issues that he was working through, just like all of us. Any enlightened, conscientious, advanced human being wants to be better today than they were yesterday.
Correct.
That was Travis. And there's a large portion of our population, all they want to do is sit on the couch and smoke weed and eat Lay's potato chips and watch reruns of Jerry Springer. I'm not talking about those people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm talking about people who are enlightened and they get it. You know, they get life.
Mm-hmm.
And that life is about eternal progression. And that life is about being better today than we were yesterday. I have issues. And if
we
you
all
don't mind
do.
My saying, Tricia, so do you, right? And all your listeners.
Oh, yes.
We all do. We're all working through these things. And I think even my wife said that in the infamous email about these issues, right, that Travis had. Travis's issues were no worse than anybody else's issues. And they were not issues of beating people up and, you know, beating on his girlfriends.
Mm-hmm.
That's not what she's talking about. She's talking about, you know, Travis and I had, not in every way, but in some ways we had similar backgrounds. And I still today, I'm working so hard to overcome those things, you know, to be better and to not let those things hold me hostage.
Mm-hmm.
And Travis was doing those things as well. But he had no issues that would cause me to disassociate with him. I loved him as much the day that he died as I ever loved him.
Aww.
You know, I love Travis Alexander, and I'm so disgusted by the character assassination and all the stuff that they brought in that has nothing whatsoever to do with
with the trial or anything,
and
right.
The trial and, what really happened. But I say that to say this, that I know that Travis wasn't, you know, he wasn't perfect. I think we're all, those of us that are generally good people, we're flawed perfection,
mm-hmm.
all of us. You know, we're God's offspring, we're his children, we're flawed perfection, trying to make our way through this life.
Yeah.
And that was Travis Alexander. That said, let me just tell you this, that he was one of the best people I've ever known. Travis
mm-hmm.
taught me how to be a friend. Travis taught me how to be good to people, how to be kind to people, how to serve people. Travis was, he obviously, clearly, we see some areas of his life that he didn't have mastery over. All of that has been put under the spotlight, unfortunately. But
mm-hmm.
what we haven't seen and what hasn't made it into the light of day in this trial is there's so many areas of Travis's life that he did have mastered. He was really an advanced kind of guy. He was an enlightened kind of guy. And he was struggling to come out of this cave that he allowed himself to go in as a result of being involved with Jody Arias.
Yes,
and
he
I'm
went
not
to
blaming
very,
Jody.
Yeah, he went
know,
to a dark
not,
place, let's face it. He did. He went to
he
a dark
did.
Place.
He did. He walked into that place, and I'm not saying Jody took him there. Jody
mm-hmm.
said, "Hey, come in," and he said, "I'm coming. You know, I'm on my way," right? And he's struggling to get out of there. And the other thing I'd like to bring up is this: is people talk about this double life, and again, I mentioned this on Dr. Drew's show the other day. He didn't have a double life; he had a sex life, and most people have them. And
yeah.
I don't know. You did, and you don't know what I did, and that's the way it's supposed to be.
Mm-hmm.
And Travis wasn't out kissing and telling. And they go, yeah, but if the bishop found out, you know, he would be XYZ. No. Let me let you in on a secret that people don't know about. Travis was working with his bishop. He had confessed to his bishop, a lot like in Catholicism where you confess. It's almost like Catholicism and AA. You know,
mm-hmm.
where you don't just go and confess to somebody through a little screen. It's an ongoing process.
Yes.
There's several follow-up appointments. You know, he's counseling with Travis and reading scriptures with Travis and giving, you know, praying over Travis, you know, praying with Travis. So there was this experience that had gone on and had been going on for a while, and that should tell us all that this wasn't a secret life. If it was a secret life, you're not going to go and voluntarily tell your ecclesiastical leader. He was begging for help. He needed help. He was in too deep, and he just couldn't get out, and his bishop was helping him.
Well, I have to say that Travis Alexander was very lucky to have a friend like you, Chris Hughes, who stood by him and is still speaking for him today. We have about, I counted, 275 million questions from the chat room. Can we take a few of them right
let's
now?
Take
and
a
then,
few, sure.
I'll tell you what, let's, Katie, cool lady, let's say hi to you. You've been on the phone the whole time. I don't know if we have you on the air. Let's see. Is Katie, cool lady, on the air, Kim? There she is. Katie, are you there?
I'm here, just
okay.
Like captivated by this show.
Me too. And I've spoken, not spoken, but texted with Jonathan from Canada, and we will have him on next week. And Michael, I'm sure, will call in next week. But so, Chris, you've got the whole 3 hours, my friend, and it's been one of absolutely the most compelling show I have ever done. Katie, I'm going to get to you in just a moment, but I'm going to ask Chris a few questions here. One of them, and you may have already touched on this, what did you make of the text that came from June 4th? Did we touch on that yet? I'm not sure. Do you know which text that is? I'm not sure which one it is.
June 4th. I don't know of it. I text Travis on June 4th, but I don't know of another one.
What did you say? Did you say to Travis on June 4th in that text?
Well, you know, I read the police report and it made me cry my eyes out. But somebody had highlighted it and sent it to me online. But it said that Chris Hughes was the last person to speak to Travis Alexander alive. And I think I was confirming with him to do our conference call. He was supposed to train on our company conference call Wednesday night, and he obviously never showed up, and now we know why. But
the text that we're talking about is the one Jody sent after she killed Travis. They just wanted you to comment on that text. Was that the one? What did she? I can't even remember what she said to him. There's so many out there. Do you remember?
Yeah, I don't remember about a text specifically.
Travis didn't.
Yeah,
I think it was just part of her plan to make it look like she didn't know anything happened and she was texting him like normal. Here's a couple of questions that I think are very compelling. If you could say one thing to Jody right now, what would you say?
You know, somebody asked me that the other day, and I just come up with nothing. And here's the thing. I wouldn't ask her anything because she is a psychopath and a liar, and she murdered my friend in cold blood. And I know that, you know, I would want to seek understanding. You know, I would want to seek and just say, you know, tell me the truth. And we all know that what you said happened. And just tell me the truth. You know what? But we know what she would do. So I just,
she would lie.
Mentally, I can't even conjure up a question for her because of who and what she is. I would never. I would never, ever give her that power. Never.
Mm-hmm. That's good.
Yeah, never give
and
her that power.
What do you think the jury will come back with? What sentence?
You know, I don't know. I am prepared for anything. I prayed with the Alexander family right after the conclusion of the trial, the other day, and I prayed to God to enlighten the minds, quicken the minds and the hearts of the jury that they'd be able to see the truth and to give a verdict in the truth. And I also prayed to God that He would prepare our hearts and minds for the verdict, whatever that verdict be. And, you know, we all need to be prepared for anything. I can't stand the comparison between the Jody Arias trial and the Casey Anthony trial. You know, we keep hearing about that comparison. These are two very, very different cases. But I will say this, that America was unbelievably disappointed. You know, they were outraged and shocked by what the jury came up with in that case. Now, this is different because Jody's already admitted to killing Travis Alexander, and so
right. We know what happened.
You know, in my mind, it's murder one or murder two, and obviously, all of us are hoping for a murder one conviction. But so that's what I'm hoping for. What do I think is going to come back? My gosh, I don't know. You know, I mean, this is America. Everybody gets due process, and this is the thing that makes me nervous. I got on Twitter years ago, but I just did updates for my blog, and I didn't really interact with people socially. You know, I just tweeted. I just sent tweets, but I wasn't really playing by the rules. I didn't know what the rules were then.
Right.
So I just started tweeting and interacting a couple of weeks ago, and that's been a very cool experience because it shows me how many beautiful, wonderful, inspiring people there are out there that are following this trial. But every now and again, you just get a knucklehead that shows up, just a pure hater, just an ignorant fool that shows up in your Twitter feed. And if we have an ignorant fool on the jury, we have to be prepared for that.
Absolutely. That's what I've always said. Be prepared, Rat.
Yeah.
Absolutely right.
So
we have, somebody wanted to pass this along, and it's a good thing that you need to know. We have people here tonight from England, from Australia, Norway, Canada, and we all got your back. You know, we're there for you.
Thank you.
And I mean, people from all over the world. Katie, I'm coming to you in just a minute. Let me get one more question in here, please. This has been asked a lot. Do you know what Jody wrote in the 18-page letter to the family?
I do. I have a copy of it, and it is the most unbelievable thing you'd ever put your eyes on. I mean, it is.
Can you, is it possible you could send it to me and I can post it? Or is that not not possible?
Yeah, we have it with the permission of the family, and we could ask them. We certainly
could. You
do,
please?
You know, do that. Yeah, we could ask them, but it is cuckoo ka-choo. I mean, she'd have had a much better shot at going for crazy, I can tell you that.
So can you give us a general idea? I know you don't want to reveal, but like, just what kind of crazy are we talking about here?
Well, so, you know, it's the whole burglar story. The two masked people came in and
right.
He put the gun to my head, and I pushed the lady, and I grabbed my... But then she says, this is just an example of Jody Ayers. She says, and I ran out to the car, and I did something I'm not proud of. I backed out without even looking.
Oh, my! She said that in the letter?
Oh, yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Boy. I don't even, that is some type of crazy that has not been invented yet. I'm telling you, that is just nuts.
And there's a part in there where she's telling this lie, and I can't remember what it was, but it might have been the two masked people story, but her handwriting totally changes. I mean, like, totally changes. And then she makes the comment about, you know, this. I'm just shaking, you know, recounting this story. And I just found that so interesting because on the stand, you know, there was some question about how she said she shakes when men are intimidating her or whatever.
Yes.
You remember that, how she said that? And the truth
yes.
of the matter is, and she said it in her own letter, the truth is she shakes when she's lying because she was telling a lie in this letter. But she's saying she's shaking because of the story. The truth is she was shaking because she's telling a lie. So just an interesting side note. But, no, it's just her crazy talk. It's just – it's more of the same.
The same old – it's just her, Jody.
Yeah.
And Jody, we've come
yeah.
to know. Are you and Sky going to be able to speak at the sentencing, do you think?
I don't think we are. We haven't been asked, and we've, you know, been sharing just back and forth a little bit with the family about kind of what they're going to do. And I think the answer is no, unless somebody shocks us. But I'd rather just see the family do that. And you know what? If I can, I don't know what you have slated for the night. I know we need to get Katie in here, but I'd like to talk about Michael for just a moment. Would you allow me to do that?
Absolutely. We have about 40 minutes left, so please do so.
Okay. Michael is, and we'll leave his last name anonymous, but Michael will be on next week, and I can't wait to hear him tell the story from his vantage point. But Michael reached out to me anonymously over the internet, and he was so sensitive. He just Googled my name, I think, and you know, the company name, and he found me, and I hope it's not inappropriate that I do this, and if it is, please just tell me and I'll go away, and I'm heartsick for the Alexanders and I just want to help. And there were several exchanges that went back and forth, and I know Michael's listening tonight and he's going to hear some of this for the first time, but you know, when someone reaches out to you that you don't know on the internet, you're always suspect anyway.
Absolutely.
You know? So it's like,
you think, what scam is this? Yes.
Right. And Michael talks about how he wants to help the Alexander family financially. And he wants to do it anonymously. He wants no attention. He wants no media. He just wants to do it anonymously. And I got so excited because what Michael didn't know is that several of the Alexanders, they just were at their wits' end financially. Mm-hmm. They just had bottomed out, and they weren't going to tell anybody this, and they weren't going to ask anybody for help. And it was terrible. I mean, really, really bad. And this angel, right? I call Michael this, you know, this angel shows up.
He is an angel.
And says,
mm-hmm.
He is. I want to help the Alexanders financially. And he talks about, you know, he lost his Nance. He lovingly makes that reference. Mm-hmm. Lost his Nance to cancer in 2011, and he's been grieving, and he's just really inconsolable. And this trial has caught his attention, and he's been following it. And really, in honor of his Nance, he was wanting to do something for the Alexander family. Well, so I get excited about it, but I'm thinking, what if this is a scam? Forgive me, Michael, but you know, what if this is a scam? You know, like he's going to have to give them this money somehow, so he's going to have to ask for a bank account number. And we all hear about these scams from Nigeria, you know, these people trying to get money out of our bank accounts.
Oh, yes.
And so we called the Alexander. We went back and forth, and Michael saying, how much do you think is appropriate? And, I mean, he mentioned an amount that just stunned me. You know, I was thinking very small amounts. He was thinking very large amounts.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, oh, my gosh, if this guy is real, he is heaven sent. He is from God. You know, I mean, really, this is how we're thinking. And we're talking to some of the Alexanders. We're saying, look, go and set up a new bank account, has no money in it. And we're trying to figure out tax obligations. And we're just trying to figure all this out with the Alexanders. And so they set it up. And Michael, this guy Michael that we don't know, wires a very large amount, I'm not going to say how much, into the Alexander's account. And it was supposed to show up immediately, but it didn't show up. And so now we're all thinking, here we go, you know, like, who is this guy? And he was really upset that it didn't show up. Well, what was cool was happening is at the same time, the moderators of the State versus Jodi Arias, you know, the two wonderful women from Australia, they emailed us and said, hey, there's people that want to contribute to the Alexander family. What should we do? And we said, oh, my gosh, this guy, Michael, and so this was all kind of happening at the same time. But Michael really was the spearhead of creating a donation page for the Alexanders, you know. So we put that page up over the weekend, and Michael sees it, and then he sends me an email, and he says, hey, I'm just heartbroken that the money didn't show up, but now I see that you're collecting money online on the Facebook page, and you know it must be worse than I thought. And I wrote back and I said, Michael, it's really bad, you know. And again, the Alexanders would never ask for anything,
right?
And so Michael said, well, I am so upset that money didn't arrive, I'm just going to send something through PayPal. And he sent another large amount through PayPal, the single largest amount ever donated to date through PayPal, on top of this outrageously, you know, generous and beautiful donation that he had made through the wire. So we see that this account, that this Michael sent this large donation via PayPal. We're like, oh my gosh, he's for real. You know, like this guy's for real. And then on Monday, if my memory serves me, the larger amount hit. And here's the cool thing about this. I mean, there's a lot cool about this. Number one, it just shows you how there's just so many beautiful people in the world, and he's at the very, very top of that list.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, the moderators and all the people that have donated. You know, people have donated $5. I mean, we're managing one of the, there's two accounts, you know, we're managing one of those accounts. And by the way, there's haters out there that say, oh, what's the administration? What are the users
yes.
taking out of this? Let me go ahead and answer that question. Not a red cent, you know, not a penny. That's just a pathetic question, but I will just answer the question that not a penny. The Alexanders are getting 100%, but I saw a $5 donation and it just brought tears to my eyes because that's probably somebody that making a $5 donation was very
difficult
for them.
It's a big deal.
Yes,
absolutely.
They did it anyway. So, anyway, and I know we need to wind down, but Michael and I have become friends through email, and we started chatting over the phone now, and mm-hmm. I know Katie and others have developed an incredible friendship with him, but I didn't want to give him, and I know he's probably blushing and horrified that I'm even talking about it, but I want to give him, you know, the public, he doesn't want it, he doesn't need it, but I want to give him the public recognition that he deserves, and again, we'll keep him anonymous, but
yes.
Michael, you are an angel to the Alexander family. One of them, and I'll leave her nameless, but one of the Alexanders had shared with us after your generous donations and after you got the ball rolling with all these other people around the world who've done the same, she said to me, or to Sky and I, that I was about to lose faith in people, in humanity, because she's sitting there watching the defense annihilate her brother. And killing him again and again and again, and they have a house, you know, back home, and they've got this place in Arizona, and they're mm-hmm. being devastated emotionally, and then financially, many of them are being devastated, and then this anonymous guy shows up in their life, and literally takes that burden away from them,
mm-hmm.
and people continue to donate, and I don't know if it would be appropriate. If you're okay with it, I'd like to put that link out there. If not, no problem.
Oh, absolutely. No, we have it up on WebSleuth. No, absolutely. What is the link?
Perfect. It's Travis Alexander Fund. I hope that's right. Is that maybe you can
I,
somebody
I believe
can
it is.
Just
Katie,
Google
isn't that correct?
Yeah.
TravisAlexanderFund.com.
Yes.
Yes. Is that correct?
I believe so.
Yes.
I'm okay.
I think it
yeah,
is.
Just double check, and it goes to a Facebook page, and it's just a PayPal link there, mm-hmm. and just so people know, you know,
that's
100%
right.
of that. That's right. Okay, great. TravisAlexanderFund.com. It's a Facebook page with a PayPal link, and you can either use your PayPal account or use a credit card, but and any amount, all amounts would help. But just so everybody knows, and in full disclosure. Obviously, the trial's coming to a close. If there's, you know, sentencing and all that may take some time should they come back with murder one. That money is to support the Alexanders, and that they have already agreed that when this is all said and done, that they're going to donate 100% of the excess to the Travis Alexander Legacy Foundation, which we're establishing right now, and it's going to be a 501(c), a legitimate nonprofit charity, and we will use those resources to continue Travis's legacy. And he had a few passions, which was one, taking care of the planet, number two, animals, taking care of animals, and number three, taking care of inner city kids that don't have an opportunity at the right education, teaching them mm-hmm. leadership and personal development. And we're going to spearhead. We're going to spearhead his legacy and move those things forward with anything
that's
left
wonderful.
Over. So,
we're
so excited about
that.
That is
so great to hear. Katie, cool lady, are you there, my dear?
I'm here.
We have Katie, cool lady, and we have Chris Hughes, one of Travis Alexander's best friends. And tonight has been an amazing show, very emotional for everybody. We have learned so much about Travis and what an amazing man he was and what a great friend Chris Hughes is. Now, Katie, you had some questions, so I'll let you go ahead.
Well, really what I'm feeling like right now is where Chris kind of guided this whole evening, that I don't want to dive back into the crime or mm-hmm. into the trial, because he's sort of leaving us on a note of Travis and goodness and I want to ride that wave. So I'm going to kind of just let my questions go. And what I want to say about that stuff, but what I want to say is I had the opportunity to meet Chris and Sky in person at court this week. And, I mean, these people are as real as they come. And, first of all, everybody says Chris Hughes is much taller than you think he is.
That's what everybody says.
But I'm just going to say it because he's, like, really tall and really handsome and really polished. Like these, some of these, you know, on-air journalist guys look like he could fit in with that look, and kind of the type of person that I might pass a judgment on in a certain mindset. And but then when he started talking, I'm like, this guy is so charismatic and so genuine at the same time, and I really felt like I was getting a taste of Travis talking to him in person.
Mm-hmm.
So I just want to say that perception for me of Chris. And
thank you.
So this night has just been amazing. Another thing I want to say, dovetailing on what Chris said, you know, I've been up close and personal with sociopathy, you know, as most people know. And the men who killed my sister were, you know, people I knew quite well as well. And he dined in my home for Thanksgiving dinner. And, of course, I had all kinds of hinky feelings. And like the Hughes, I'm grateful that I even had one conversation. Sorry, it's making me emotional.
It's okay. It's okay.
That you can rest in the fact that you even had one conversation with that person warning them, and then you just have to let it go because their destiny is their destiny. But thankfully, they had conversations where they warned Travis. I had one conversation with my sister that where I warned her. And so I'm not plagued with this guilt like some people might be, that you feel like you could have saved them. Because what people don't understand is that when Chris said about how, you know, Travis did walk into this and my sister did walk into her murder in a certain way, you know, and people criticized her to me and how could she be so stupid? And my sister was a very smart person, raised by two PhDs, had a master's degree. She wasn't stupid, but she was vulnerable in a certain way. And my sister had just turned 30, just like Travis. And she was tortured about, as I've heard Travis was, about not being married and not having children at that age. So they both shared a vulnerability. None of this I knew walking into this trial, by the way. And as time has gone on, I've realized the similarities, which are really very, very astounding between my sister and Travis, both exactly the same age. If you took the autopsies and lined them up and took away the gunshot, they were killed in almost an identical manner. And both vulnerable to this kind of evil that came into their lives. And the power of a sociopath and this kind of, I call it a demon. I don't know what else to call this. The power of this to cause people to step outside of their reasoning and their own comfort zones and to hold them there is beyond anything that any of us can imagine. And so they were up against, both my sister and Travis were up against something that was so far beyond their capability of managing that I just have learned so much about that researching this stuff over the years that you got to kind of give them a break at the same time, you know? And there can be red flags, but you have no idea the level. And I'm sure Chris and Travis's family and certainly myself and my friends had a bad feeling. But you never go to murder.
I know.
You never go there in your mind. You think this person's going to get hurt. You think they're going to be, you know, like maybe they thought he was going to destroy his business and lose his house or whatever. But your mind never goes to they're going to be slaughtered. And unfortunately now mine does go there. But, you know, that's the innocence that's been lost in me.
Mm-hmm.
But I just want, you know, that the ability for these kind of people to manipulate is so far beyond our good people's ability to fathom.
Right.
And that's an important thing to know, you know, of how people are victimized in this way. So that's kind of, you know, something I want to say. And then dovetailing on this Michael thing that, you know, I've been holding his anonymity for him, but now that Chris opened that door, I just feel like I can add to that, you know, Michael and I worked on a major project in the last couple of weeks, and I'll just say the Alexanders were all able to stay together through this last week because of him. And I was able to stay in a hotel last week because of him. And I did not expect to get in the courtroom, nor did I this week, but I was able to host Chris's brother, Dave, watching the first day of closing arguments with me and Katie Wick in a room, thankful to Michael for providing for me, and to sit there and watch that in the comfort of a space where we just kept pausing and Dave was telling us stories about Travis as we were going along. And I will never forget that, because it was such a blessing for me to have that sacred time with someone who was very close to Chris and Travis and all that. So all of that was provided through this, Michael, as well.
Katie, I think everybody that's listening right now wishes there was some type of invention where we could reach you through and just hold you. I am so, it's just, you break our hearts and you give us hope, and we love you, Katie. We really do.
Well, picture this. I'll just give you this moment about that, and then I'll stop talking about it. I also watched the second day of closing arguments in that room with like nine people came there, and we watched together. And when it was over, when Juan Martinez finished, I mean, I just lost it. And one of Travis's good friends was in there too, Julie. And I just lost it. And I'm telling you, this is the power of what good people, like Chris has said, were drawn around Travis. Even in death, I was immediately surrounded by women who just, I mean, we were just all sobbing in that room. And it was really, you know, the release of all that was really a profound moment. And I've just heard from so many people, including the guests that we're having on next week, which is why I encourage you to have him on. Cause, you know, people saying, this man has touched me in death more than many people ever have who are still alive in my life.
That is amazing.
That is a huge legacy for Travis Alexander. And I think that's why this trial is so big, not because of Jody, but because of him.
That is, you're right. It's Travis that shines through here in all of this nastiness that has gone on in the courtroom. It's his goodness and how he was a fine, upstanding young man who had troubles just like everybody else. Just like you said, Chris, nobody is perfect. And we are all better for knowing Travis Alexander, even unfortunately if it is after his death. He truly was amazing. Chris, we have so many questions. Can you just take a couple more?
Yeah, I'm good for the full 3 hours.
Okay, great.
No problem.
Here's one from a longtime Web Sleuths member. This is, let's see if I can get her up here, Talisa. Talisa, are you here?
I'm here, sweetheart.
Okay, Talisa, you have a question for Chris?
Well, I had a comment and a question. I just wanted to tell Chris that I thought he was the true meaning of friendship. The way he is sitting behind Travis is just amazing. And about the fund that they're going to donate the proceeds, please tell Chris to take the proceeds. Tell them to take the proceeds and catch up on their bills and donate what's left.
That's a good idea. I don't think anybody would mind that, you know.
And not at all. I donated and I wish they would do that. That's and then
true.
Donate what's left.
There you go. And did you have a question?
Yes, I did. Chris, do you know what the financial person was going to testify about?
No, I don't.
Okay.
Yeah, sorry.
That's okay, sweetheart.
I wish I had something better than that, but yeah, I don't
know. He knows everything else but that. So, Lisa, we got to run. We're running short on time,
I just wanted to let you know that Webster's loves you and Sky, and we love you, Tricia.
Oh, thank you, and we love you. Thank
you
for calling in, my dear.
Bye-bye.
Okay, we're going to take one more question here. Grace, let's get Grace up here. Hold on a second, Grace. Grace, you have a question for Chris?
I do. And first I want to say that, Chris, it pains me so deeply to hear. I just want you to know that I feel your loss terribly, and I have nothing but admiration for the Alexander family and the way that they have handled this. the way that they have been there every day through the awfulest, awfulest of details. I am, and also not only the Alexander family, but Deanna Reed, I cannot tell you the admiration that I had for that woman when she sat on that stand and had to listen to those disgusting things that Nurmi said to her for no other reason than to cause Jodi Arias pleasure. And make no mistake, that's the only reason those questions were asked.
You're right.
Was to cause her pleasure, the only reason. But I do also want to say that I don't think that Jodi started planning to kill Travis on the 26th. Of May. I think she started planning it the day she pulled out of Mesa in her U-Haul. She did not want to go back to that drab, dreary little life.
Yep.
You look at the pictures of where she was living at her grandparents, and I'm sure her grandparents are very lovely people and living within their means, but Jodi wanted more than that, and she did not want to go back to that. She was already on a downward spiral when she met Travis. She was losing her home. She was putting, according to her father, $3,000 a month mortgage payments on her credit card. She was going to lose her car. She went out and got herself breast implants. She had dyed herself blonde and got herself a car that was exactly the same as Daryl Brewer's wife. What does that tell you?
Trying to copy
she
all the time.
She was already in a financial and emotional spiral when she met Travis. Daryl betrayed her. He didn't betray her by cheating on her. Daryl Brewer betrayed her because he didn't want to marry her and he didn't want to have any more children. That, to her, was a betrayal. The minute that he uttered those words to her, she was done with him. Sadly, she met Travis, and with Travis she saw the good life, the travel, the exciting things, the nice house, the BMW, the Prius, all the rest of it. And when she had to leave Mesa, after she had to give back her Borg futon, that she drove from Mesa to Wairika, plotting right then and there. On May 10th came the phone call that she recorded. Why did she record that call? So she'd have some evidence of what she was planning. And what she was planning to say afterwards. Maybe it didn't occur to her, you know, right consciously then, but subconsciously, that's what she was planning to do. Make no mistake.
Yeah, I'm with you. I'm totally with that.
And I also want to mention that I don't belong to Web Sleuth, but I do read there and I do listen to your radio program, Tricia. I have followed this case. I belong to another forum, and there's a girl there who actually went to the same family home evenings as Jodi.
Oh, yeah.
And she recalled right when the testimony in the journal entry was read to her about her attending family home evening after he supposedly broke her finger, and she recalled right then and there, she said, you know what? She said, It just brought it all back to me, this testimony. She saw Jodi at that family home evening after he supposedly broke her finger, and there was not a damn thing wrong with that finger. Not a damn thing. So you're right.
Absolutely.
You go.
And she also tried to say on the stand that somebody, a PPL associate or somebody that was doing some stuff for Travis, had seen her splint. Really? Well, where was he and why didn't he testify?
Mm-hmm.
There
There's
you
nobody.
Go.
She couldn't
and
even
my last
know.
And,
she
and
couldn't
then
even
my
get
last
someone alive for her.
And then my last and final point that I'll make, and then I'll get off because I'm sure there's tons of other people waiting, is that those letters, I've done a lot of reading. I've read through all of the court minutes, as time-consuming and mind-numbing as that was, trying to trace the genesis of those letters from my own point of view. And I've done a lot of reading. It's my understanding that she forged those letters in her cell. She would have had access to any copies of his journal through discovery. She's allowed to have legal stuff in her cell. She forged those letters in her cell, and then somehow, either when she was acting as her own attorney or through some other means, she passed those letters to Matt McCartney, and he scanned them, and then he sent them to her attorney. And all of it, and then... And that's also why Matt McCartney didn't testify. He also didn't get up and testify to the supposed bruises that he saw on her throat after Travis threw her to the ground and strangled her.
That's a
load of BS.
Absolutely. Grace, I got to tell you, everybody in the chat room is saying, what a great sleuther. She's amazing. Smart caller. So you done
well.
Well,
just, again, I cannot tell you how much my heart has gone out to the Alexander family. You know, you see them, I don't know them personally, but I please just tell them they have my utter admiration for everything that they are as a family, that it's so incredibly important. And please also to Deanna Reed, my God, what a brave, confident woman, and I can certainly see why Travis would still have been in love with her.
And thank you, Grace.
I will pass that along.
Thank
she
you
is
so
a
much.
Fabulous, fabulous person, Deanna Reed.
Thank you.
Good as they come.
Just, you know, 50 million shades of difference
from Jody.
Also explains why Jody dyed her hair brown, because if you notice, Travis did have a type other than mm-hmm. Lisa. They all had brown hair. Mimi, Deanna.
Right.
Right?
Oh, very, very creepy.
Yeah.
So
thank
it wasn't
you, Grace.
Just for an alibi. She was,
you're right.
You know, she was doing other things with it, too.
She
so,
was copying people. Grace, you are a wonderful caller. Please call in every week. You make me sound good.
Yeah.
Thanks,
she's great.
Well, again, my heart goes out to all of you, and I am, I'm not a religious person, but I am a spiritual person, and my thoughts are with all of you and the family. I'm not normally a proponent of the death penalty, but I would like to see her get it only for the fact that she will be so isolated. I think about the things that she will put the family through during an appeals process. But I did see an interview with Tanisha and Stephen, and I understand that it's their wish that she get the death penalty, if only because she will be socially isolated and she will have not be able to, you know,
hurt
two
anybody.
Phone calls a week and so on mm-hmm. and so on. That would be a greater punishment than death.
Absolutely.
As far as she's concerned.
Okay, Grace, thank you so much again.
Thank you.
You take care, okay? Let's talk about... Yes.
Real quick, I don't want to sidetrack here, but I've been moved, you know, emotionally listening to these last few people on the calls. And, you know, I'm thinking, what would Travis say to this group of people if he had this audience?
Mm-hmm.
And and that's been kind of messing me up, you know, emotionally. But, you know, I'll tell you this, Travis would preach a sermon.
Mm-hmm.
And he would tell everybody, and forgive me for doing this, but this is on my heart. And Travis would tell you that you are a divine child of God and that greatness is in you. And he would say that your past doesn't have to equal your future. You know, one of the things that Travis and I had in common is we came from a place we weren't supposed to do well in life.
Mm-hmm.
And yet through personal growth, through working on ourselves, through providing greater and greater levels of value and service to the marketplace, he and I were able to raise ourselves out of an otherwise bleak situation and scenario. And what Travis wanted to do, you know.
It's okay.
What he wanted to spend his life doing was sharing God, more specifically Jesus, and personal development. You know, and telling people your life doesn't have to be what it is. If you're happy, that is awesome. And if you're not, you don't have to live like that anymore. You can raise yourself up. You can tear out the script of your old life, tear it up into little pieces. You can remake your entire life. He would share with, you know, with your audience, even though it's a web sleuth audience and not, you know, not his genre, but he would say, you know, that if you can read and you don't read, you're a volunteer illiterate. You know, if you can read and you don't read, you're no better off than he or she who does read or who can read. And you know, he was all about encouraging people to read good books and to get outside your hood, get outside your neighborhood, get outside the philosophy and the belief system of your friends and your family. Reach out and discover other and better ways of living life and being good to people and learning how to be better again today than you were yesterday. Travis was one of the best students I ever had. I took this guy from, you know, from $9 an hour to you know, $8,000 a month, you know, in mm-hmm. income. And I know it seems silly to talk about money, But Travis then turned around and he began to tell people, his message was, look, my life was a mess, you know, and through focusing on serving other people in the marketplace and bettering yourself, this is what happened for me, and it can happen for you. And I just wanted to share that because I know you've got a mix, you've got a variety of people listening today, and there may be somebody. There might be somebody like Travis, or like me, that didn't have parents that paid for our college, you know, didn't have the opportunities that are afforded by so many other people. But rather than getting on drugs and rather than blaming the government and blaming our parents and blaming our friends or what our circumstances, whatever they may be, you know, I lifted myself up, turned around, gave Travis some information that allowed him to lift himself up. And again, different genre, but you've got to have somebody out there listening that needs to lift himself up. And I'm telling you, you can do it, and you can live any life of your choosing. It is totally your choice and only your choice. And I can tell you that if Travis were here, he'd want to say something similar.
Do you think Travis would be shocked at how many people, millions of people, care for him and his family? Do you think he would be surprised at this?
I do, but you know what? The thing about Travis is he was larger than life. Like, this is so obviously not the murder and the tragedy, but the media frenzy and the million. This is Travis, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he was just larger than life. Do you know something? He had a goal to be on the front cover of Time magazine.
Well, and he almost got,
you know,
it. Who knows? He still may.
Yeah, he still may. So, yeah, but it's just beautiful, the outpouring of love and support. And I just want to thank everybody for that. You know, it's just they see Travis for who he was. And he was good as gold.
And I hope that you feel that you have said what you needed to say. And is there anything else you would like to add? Is there anything you've forgotten? Because we want it out there for everybody to hear.
I would say this in closing. We all have an obligation to forgive. And some people aren't ready for that conversation, but I'm going to ask everybody that's listening to not allow Jody Arias to have any power in your life. And if we don't forgive her for the disgusting, evil, heinous things that she has done, whether it's murder one, premeditated, death penalty, whether it's felony murder, many, many years, whether it's second degree murder, it doesn't matter. If we don't forgive, she will have power in our life. And I refuse to give that woman any power in my life. I belong to the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, and as quote-unquote Mormons, we have been taught by the Lord. He says this, quote, I, the Lord, will forgive whom I will forgive, but of you it is given to, and I'm hoping I'm getting this as close to right, it is given to commit, to forgive all people. And we have someone who has done something despicable here. If I can lead the way, great, but I don't know that I have, but I will forgive for what has happened, and I will be liberated completely from this tragedy in my life. And I'd like to put a challenge out to all of your listeners as well, and not just Jody Arias, but we all need to forgive people in our lives. And when we hold these grudges, and we keep this darkness in our hearts, it does not hurt the other person. It only hurts ourselves. And so I admonish you, if you'll receive the admonishment, to liberate yourselves, to be liberated from this darkness by allowing the light of forgiveness to penetrate your hearts.
Chris Hughes, thank you so much for bringing Travis Alexander to life for us tonight. Again, I will say he was very lucky to have a friend in you. And Travis Alexander, like you mentioned, has taught more people, and he will continue to teach people in death. And your words are from his heart, and we know that. Thank you so much, Chris, for coming on tonight.
Thank you, Tricia, very much.
Take care.
I appreciate it.
You bet. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye, and good night, everybody.
And that is it, everybody. I'm just going to wrap it up because I'm about to burst out in tears. So next week, hopefully we'll have Michael on, we'll have Jonathan on, and hopefully we'll have a verdict. So you see, we will see you next week, 8 p.m. Eastern. This is Tricia's True Crime Radio. Good night.